Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Adeptus Terra podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Sam.
And yeah, this episode's called Bloopers Galore because there's frankly too many already.
Well, we're at 5 minutes 55 and we're just about to start.
Yeah, literally that's the first sentence said. But if you're joining us for the first time, hope you enjoy the show. If you're joining us for the 6th time, potentially, then thanks for all your support. We've loved chatting to you on the Facebook page, getting all the new listeners. Really want to thank the Overlords for giving a shout out a couple episodes back now. I can't remember.
They record so many.
Yeah, they're an inspiration. But yeah, that was really generous of you guys, and I know we've picked up listeners from that. So thanks if you're listening. We've got a good show ahead of us, and let's just jump straight into it.
Okay, so go.
So this is our first segment of the show. The news from Terra. It's kind of what we've been up to. Or lack of.
In this month has been.
Yeah, we've both had quite a lot going on in our life.
It kind of feels like I've had the, you know, you have the January blues.
Yeah.
It's like I've had come that in February.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, I've got a big refurb happening at work. You've just got a new job.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
And I'm lazy.
And yeah, well, I have to admit that I've been a little bit lazy too. Yeah. But we've still got stuff to talk about as always. So hope you enjoy it. And yeah, let's get into it. So, purchases.
Cool. So, I actually haven't made any purchases this month. Not due to lack of funds or anything like that. It's just I sort of not really needed to.
Yeah.
I've been really quite fortunate that I've got two great friends. Firstly, Ryan, who very nicely donated about 4,000 points worth of Blood Angels to me. Was absolutely amazing. Secondly, my friend Chip, who actually made some objective markers for me.
Awesome.
So Ryan donated, I'll read out the list of stuff.
It's quite a lot.
It's quite a long list. It's a chaplain on a Space Marine bike, a chaplain in Terminator armor, a normal chaplain with Astraf, a squad of 5 Death Company Marines with jump packs, a squad of 5 Death Company Marines with bolt guns. And a rhino with a storm bolter on with 4-year-old rhino doors.
Yeah, Death Company rhino.
A 5-man Sangaruni guard squad, a 5-man assault terminator squad, a 5-man terminator squad, a 10-man vanguard vet squad, a 10-man tax squad, a 10-man tax squad, 2 10-man assault marines, assault squad, sorry, a land speeder, a 5-man space marine bike squad with an attack bike, 2 storm ravens, a barb pred, and 2 storm talons.
A partridge on a pear tree.
Basically.
Yeah, so along with that, he also donated all his scenery to our club.
Cool.
So we've got a whole board and a half worth of scenery.
Which is really cool because it's completely different to the kind of scenery we normally play with. So it's got the Wall of Martyrs kit in it. It's a lot more city-based scenery.
Yeah, stuff I love.
Stuff Matt loves, I don't. It's just nice to have something different at a club.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan kind of fell out of the hobby, still doing 30k stuff. That's kind of where he's
massive on 30k.
His real love is. So he's kind of fallen out of 40k, not really interested. And he kind of gets quite generous when he gets in that place. I mean, he's the guy who gave me my first ever Space Wolf kit and Space Wolf Codex.
Yeah.
It's his fault.
It's his fault. Blame him.
But yeah, so he's been really generous. And what did Chip do for you?
So Chip, our friend Chip, he runs a company called Burncraft. They're on burncraft.co. I keep wanting to say .co.uk. It's not. It's burncraft.co.
Yeah.
And what he made for me was little, about, what do you say, about 3mm wire. No, 3.
Right.
Basically, a little like pogs. If you know what pogs are, then just go to Google and type pogs. In pogs.
They're a little bit bigger than a 25mm base. They're probably closer to between 25 and 40.
Mill
somewhere
base.
In there.
Cool. Basically, they're objective markers with Roman numerals from 1 to 6 on them with the cooler underneath them. He makes them by basically burning wood with a hot iron. It looks like a soldering iron. And like I said, he runs his company. It's, they produce custom pieces for people. So definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. He'd love to do objective markers for you guys if you think they look pretty cool. I'm sure you'll have a photo of the Sam's ones up on the website.
Yep.
You'll post them up on our Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Get a quote. It's all by commission. So you have completely unique stuff. He also does just general daily life stuff like room signs and things. And that's really cool. So yeah, just check it out. 5 minutes of your time to look at something cool on the internet.
Other than that, I haven't really bought anything. I've been quite lazy.
Well, that's not too bad for your wallet, I guess.
No, not bad for my wallet or my house deposit. I suppose I've saved a door knocker. this month. but yeah.
Okay, so shall we do my purchases?
Yes, do your purchases. How many eBay bids did you make this month?
None.
None.
I know.
No eBay purchases.
About five people just fell out of their chair. Like every episode, I've had four or five eBay purchases this month. Not so much. I have bought one big kit, though.
Right.
I bought a barbed Hyrodoll from Forge World.
So let me guess. Your accident was on the Forge World page. They set up the new one-click purchase thing, and you already had your PayPal details in there, and it just magically happened.
Not quite. I needed one to finish off my 3K NID force. What was that?
It's you, not me.
Oh, sorry about that, my phone. So, yeah, I needed Barbed Hyrodoll to finish off my NID force, because I always work to a list, which, you know,
absolutely.
Avid listeners will know. So, yeah, I needed one to finish off. I had the free shipping voucher for January.
Yep.
So that saved quite a lot of money. So I purchased one. Now, what I did to make up that money is I sold a lot of stuff that I wasn't using. To right. Everything Ben.
Everything Ben.
Which he loves his new nickname, by the way.
Yep, good.
But yeah, so sold like a load of NID stuff to him, a couple of Space Marine bits that I wasn't using. So yeah, that was really good. And that paid for the Barbed Hyrodoll. So I bought the big kit, but didn't really cost me anything in the grand scheme of things.
Well, it looks like you're trying to justify it to yourself.
A little bit.
Does Jenny know?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. And it went together really well.
Not like the Storm Eagle.
The Storm Eagle?
Storm Talon.
No. Try again.
Storm Face. Bird of Prey.
Fire Raptor.
See? Fire Raptor.
But yeah, no, the Fire Raptor went together okay. There was a few issues with...
Bent parts.
Bent parts and yada, yada, yada. Gaps needing filling.
Yeah.
The Barbed Hyrodoll was... I don't know if it's an older kit, so it was a simpler way of putting it together. Not sure, but it went together really well. Kind of moving into building now because we've both done purchasing. But yeah, I got home one night. Jenny was going out with her friends. So I thought, got a couple hours in on my own. So between kind of 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., I built a Barbed Hyrodoll.
What every normal man does when he has a night on his own.
Yeah. Fall around with resin. But yeah, so that was really cool. And it went together really well. And I get to play it this Saturday. I'm excited.
Is it built?
Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah. It's ready to go.
Is it painted?
No.
Oh, well, that meme was right then.
it's ready to go. It's built.
Okay, more than what I've built this month. I've literally built nothing.
Have you really not built anything?
Trying to think, because
a month is a long time. You must have done something.
The Chimera was built in last month.
Yeah, that was
white because it. Yeah.
Yeah, sat not nothing really happening. I don't know.
Oh, it's on the shelf.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I don't know. I nearly built a Baneblade today.
You nearly bought a Baneblade.
Well, Shadow Sword. It was on my shopping cart.
Oh man, you need to look at the one with the Vulcan Mega Bolter. Looking through the rules yesterday with Imperial Fist Ben, and yeah, oh, so good.
Yeah. But, so other than that, nothing really. Nothing, I haven't built.
Oh, you haven't built anything. All right. Well, fine. I built a Barbed Hyrodoll. You know, one of the biggest kits that you can kind of get. Gargantuan creature.
That's
and
fine.
You did nothing.
I'm just gonna shoot you in the night again.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
What have you painted then?
Painting? Okay, this is a bit of a dire thing for me.
Yeah.
Why don't you do painting first? Because I might shed a tear.
So, technically, if you're looking at brushwork, I painted a Terminator shoulder pad. But if you're looking at overall, I sprayed all of what Ryan very kindly donated to me black, and the majority of it's now sprayed red. I had real issues with the red spray paint, the blood.
Oh, really?
The Blood Angel paint they do, whatever they call it.
Yeah,
blood red, bar red,
fist on red, isn't
fist
it?
On red, whatever the spray is, it's red. And it sort of basically bubbled.
Okay.
Like when sprayed on, I don't know whether it was just too cold, or not right conditions, or not shaken properly. So basically, I sprayed Storm Raven. There you go. Storm Raven.
Get your names.
It's difficult. Storm Talon and Storm Raven. I sprayed them red, and then I sort of looked. I could see the paint wasn't right, so I sort of stopped there. Didn't really want to go over it too much. So they're all right. I'm probably going to give them another coat. I think I'm learning from using that paint and just giving it multiple coats. But everything else is sprayed black now.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's not bad.
It's a good jumping off point. And like I said, I tried last night because I was quite conscious we were going to record tonight and realised I hadn't actually painted anything. Sat down to paint a Terminator and painted a shoulder pad.
Yeah, just and then the oomph wasn't there.
I think I've got painter's block.
Yeah, that can happen. I mean, I've struggled this month with painting because I've been painting a shrine of the Aquila, which is a GW kit, the kind of cathedral. We've both got a very similar kit, if not looking the same way.
I got it first.
Yeah, I know. But it's got four eagle heads.
Basically, it's walls, like a rectangle. Like a rectangle stood up. like a box of cereal.
Yeah, it's basically a big box with... This is such a bad...
Right. So if you get the eagle part of the Aquila... Times that by four.
And put it on each side.
Put it on each side.
And then
it makes a skyscraper.
Yeah. So I've got one of those and I've been painting it for a long time. It sat in the corner of my desk, kind of going, paint me. And I've gone, nah, models. So I thought, oh, I'll finally give it a go. And to be honest, from the get-go, I was never happy with it.
Yeah.
So I painted the gold and I missed a stage out by accident. So it just didn't look right.
Yeah.
So I decided, oh, well, I was using the oxide paint that GW produced, and I thought, I'll just put more on, that'll cover up the gold. And I put that on, and I remember showing you over FaceTime it, and you were like, oh, it's a bit green. and I carried on painting and kind of ignored it a little bit, and then I looked at it the other day and thought, yeah, still a bit green. So I thought, oh, I'll do a bit of weathering on it. So I started weathering it using various techniques and dry brushes and stuff, and it came out okay. But it didn't look like any other part of my scenery.
Yeah.
Didn't match the rest.
No.
So I've basically undercoated it again and started again.
Good, awesome. Good to see you fixing it.
So, yeah, well,
It was pretty green.
From the get-go, it was not right, and I should have just stopped and started again then.
Yeah.
And I've put a lot of hours into it this month, probably, like, trying to get it back to okay.
Yeah.
And although I got it to a position there, I think I would have been happy with it.
Yeah.
Because it didn't match anything else. That was it. I had to go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'd got so far that it wasn't even like, oh, just touch up that area. It was, I need to start again.
Yeah.
So I've started again. I'm probably halfway through, but it's been a real slog, like just painting this building. Scenery kit should be a bit quicker than models. And
yeah.
I'll probably put more time into this than I have the last 12 squads I've painted. So it's been a bit disheartening, the painting side of things.
I think that's going to be my next like hobby commitment for the next month, is probably going to try and force myself to paint. Like, I know it's never good to kind of force something like that because it's kind of creative, and if you're not bothered with it, then you're kind of crappy.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that it's actually part of the hobby that I really do like. And quite frankly, I feel that I need to just push myself to do it.
Yeah, and sometimes I think that's probably is what is needed. For me, I want to get this building done so I can forget about it and just put it in a box and it can go away forever.
Give it to me if you want.
I'm hating on that at the moment.
If you give it to me, but I can do a platform between the two.
No, shush. Stop it. But I'm going to get my orcs done.
Yeah?
I've only got a couple more. I've got an orc knob, an orc looter, I think like two boys.
Oh, Ryan also got me some grey knights.
Oh, yeah, awesome. Yeah. Yay. Thank you, Ryan.
10 purifiers, yeah. Drago, and another crow.
So, yeah, my commitment is to have my orcs done and dusted at 1-5, ready for you to get to your 1-5.
Yeah.
And then we can push forward.
Yeah. I think that's going to happen a lot quicker.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's been really cool. I've seen a lot of the models going. Obviously, now I've got those 10 purifiers. It kind of fills up a squad that I needed. So it just means a case of just buying a few more little bits and I'm done. I need to rip arms off, but who doesn't?
Who doesn't need to rip arms off, everyone?
No.
You heard it here first. Cool, right. Well, there's kind of our misery of hobby through all three segments.
Next month will be much longer.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
I'm going to buy a Baneblade.
You heard it here first, guys. Games.
Games?
Yeah, so games. You had any?
Against you.
Oh, yeah.
That's my only game.
I nearly forgot about that game. Okay, well, shall I do my other kind of game?
Have I had another game? No. This month for hobbies been so bad.
It's really been your January blues, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've been working on my bike a lot more. It sounds really bad, but I've been actually going outside.
Yeah,
and enjoying.
Well,
the
weather's
the
kind of started changing.
Yeah, but if you do yours, then I'll cover ours. Cause,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of played an interesting game at the club using the what's it called, Walls of Martyr kit that Ryan donated.
Yeah.
We kind of used it with pseudo Zone Mortalis rules. So we set it up in a kind of maze fashion. We built a courtyard in the middle, and we said that you can't see over the walls. Like, it's actually like complete hallways in a building. And then we played with blips, like you would in Space Hulk or Space Crusade.
What, for each man? For each man?
For each squad.
Right, okay.
So we did 500 points. We had two Walls of Martyr kit because Everything Ben brought his one. Ooh, a Baneblade.
£47 on eBay.
Not bad. Put your phone away. We're recording, damn it.
There's 8 minutes left.
Be professional.
There's 8 minutes left.
Oh,
I don't need a Baneblade. Where's airplane mode?
But anyway, so yeah, so we set up this with blips, blip for each squad, 500 points, and it was Everything Ben and Imperial Fist Ben versus me.
Was you nids?
I was playing all Gene Stealers, as you would. Why not?
Yep.
Everything Ben brought nids as well, but he had like warriors, a Venom Throat, a couple of Gaunt squads.
So a warring faction.
Yeah. And Imperial Fist Ben bought Imperial Fists, funny enough.
Surprise.
So he had Thunder Hammer, Storm Shield, Terminators. Don't know why that was so hard to say.
Try to say that, right?
That's a challenge. And he had two tactical squads as well. Cool. And so he had three blips. I had three blips. I had three squads of Gene Stealers and a Broodlord. Ben had what he had. We set up with the blips and we placed a blip each in time. So they weren't always together. Like, you didn't deploy all your blips at one time. I went, then one of the Bens went, then the other Ben went until we set up. And then we moved them, you know, using normal rules. And you can only move one blip as your turn.
Okay, cool.
And when a blip was seen, it was revealed.
Okay.
So as you walk around a corner and saw an enemy blip, your blip and the enemy's one would reveal.
Pre-game, did you know what everyone else had brought?
We knew each other's lists, right, but we didn't know what blip was what squad.
It would have been cool if you didn't know each other's lists. That would have been...
It would have been, yeah, an extra maybe something we might do if we do it again.
Yeah.
But it was really fun, like just kind of walking around the corner like, oh, that's the Thunderhammer Terminators. Oh, no. You know, and things like that. And it was really fun. We played it a couple of times, just a new way of playing. So that was really fun, just doing that. Like I said, it's really fun. Imperial Fist Ben won by like three dudes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, three tactical marines just left alive.
That's unknown. Who never wins?
He's on a bit of a roll recently, actually.
Yeah. You're playing him Saturday, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. He's playing his guard.
And you're playing your...
Nids.
Barbed Herodor.
Yeah, 3K on 3K. He's bringing a Baneblade, I'm bringing a Barbed Herodor.
This is only more reason for me to get a Shadow
Shield. It's going to be so fun. But it was a really good game. It was just a different way of playing. We kind of made it up because we were around and there was three of us. And we didn't want two of us gaming and the other one just sitting around.
Yeah, of course.
So we just threw it together and kind of made up the rules as we went. So if you had a squad revealed, you moved that squad and a blip.
Cool.
So it was a blip plus whatever was revealed.
Okay.
So eventually it turned into a normal game once everything was revealed.
So it's kind of like, you know, on submarines when they have the sonar go around.
Yeah.
Bloop, bloop.
Yeah.
Bloop, bloop.
It was exactly like that. It was really good, actually. It gave a... different thematic. It was like, I don't know what's around that corner.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of just go for it and then either be pleasantly surprised or not. I think my Gene Stealers did really well. They work so well in that kind of scenario. Like, they're just classic, aren't they?
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's just so nice. And it ended with literally I had one Gene Stealer charging five Marines.
Cool.
I survived the Overwatch, killed two of them, and the last three punched me dead, and then he won. But that was a kind of a new game that we tried out, and it worked quite well, so we'll probably adapt it. Thinking maybe it could be good for Kill Team.
Okay, yeah.
Because then each blip is a man.
Yeah.
And that would be really cool.
That would have been really awesome. You would never be able to do 500 points, though.
No, well, we did 500 points, and it worked okay.
No, sorry, as if every
man... Oh, no. Well, I mean, Kill Team's 200, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it would probably work even better as Kill Team. Because you would have characters just walking around corners. So even if you knew each other's list, it could be potential six things rather than three.
Yeah.
Things like that. So yeah, it was good. So we might try that again. But other than that, it's mine and your game.
So it was a 2K game. The scenario was Big Guns Never Tire.
Yeah.
The deployment was Diagonal. My favorite deployment.
I can't remember what it's called. Vanguard Strike?
Diagonal Force Strike?
No. But yeah, it's the diagonal deployment. I hate it.
I really like it.
I find it so difficult.
Why?
I don't know. It throws off my deployment plans. I don't know why. Just I can't seem to deal with it. Every game I play like that, I find really hard.
Well, don't give the end of the game away. So it was Big Guns Never Tire, diagonal deployment. The lists. So it was Matt's NIDs. So if you want to say what your NIDs you brought.
Yeah. Well, I need to open up Quartermaster first.
Me too, actually. Blimey.
But yeah, I brought 2,000 points of NIDs. I brought my Dima Charon, which was really cool. Got to play that for the first time, really, in a proper game. But here's the list, right. I brought a Winged Hive Tyrant with Twin Link Devourers. I brought a Walking Hive Tyrant just on the ground, just to provide synapse to the monstrous creatures and stuff. Brought a single Lictor in Elites. Then I brought all my Gene Stealers. So that's 3 squads of 10 and a Broodlord. And then 5 squads of 5, which is the Manufactorum Gene Stealer formation.
Cool.
Which is, yeah, they get a special infiltrate and get hit and run. So, yeah, they were quite cool. The Dima Charon, as I've mentioned. Then I brought a Tranifex, a Trigon, and a single Carnifex. And that was my 2K list.
Awesome. Mine's my standard guard 2K list. I'll quickly run through it. I'm sure you guys have heard it many, many times now because I talk about it all the time. So it's Paskin and Punisher with 2 Demolisher tanks as my HQ. I've got 2 veteran squads, 1 in a Chimera and 1 on the floor. They've both got a plasma gun and a flamer each. Oh, hang on. They've both got a plasma gun and a flamer in each squad. There we go.
Yeah.
I've got a Hellhound squad, obviously with a multi-melter. A Vendetta gunship, which sort of just flies around and annoys things.
Yeah, oh. So annoying.
A Lehman Russ squadron, which has 2 Lehman Russ battle tanks in it, 2 Wyverns, and an Imperial Knight.
Oh, yes, the Knight.
The best Knight ever.
So, yeah, the game was an interesting one. I was really excited at first. I mean, playing you is always fun anyway. Like,
I'm a barrel of laughs.
It's always good. The table looked really good. We used your scenery, I think.
Yeah, I had... Did I have my... No, I didn't have my... realm, did
no,
I?
No,
it was,
no.
It was the grey boards.
Yeah, grey boards, painted grey, and then just your scenery, city bits, and various things. It just looked really good. You were kind of hunkered down in a corner with all your tanks in a line, and my NIDs were right on the edge of my deployment, ready to run at you.
Yeah.
And I was really excited to see what would happen. Especially, I just wanted that Dima and your Knight to just clash in the middle of the board, which did happen. But yeah, I just found it like... I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. Gene Stealers and Monstrous Creatures. This is what I want my NID Force to be. Let's do it.
And then the gun started firing.
And then, yeah. Then I realized that armor 14 is really hard to kill when the highest weapon you have is a strength 6.
Yeah. So, the game, without going turn by turn, it basically went, I shot Matt.
I lost a lot.
Matt lost a lot. I shot Matt again as he got a little bit closer. Matt lost a lot.
Yeah.
And then he was in assault range. I shot him again and...
It died.
It died. So
yeah, it was quite a frustrating...
This is going to be the similarity again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Similarly.
It was a real frustrating game for me just because like my Gene Stealers just never quite made it. They just died before they could get into range, even with the infiltrate. They just... Because it was like... The scenery was really good, except it was quite open in the middle.
Yeah.
So my running towards you, I couldn't rely on cover saves and NIDs just die at that point.
Well, when you've got 20 shots from a pass tank.
Yeah, it was quite brutal. My monster creatures did well, but again, trying to pierce armor 14 from shooting just was so difficult.
Yeah.
Just bits died, and I think when I think about it, I killed your Wyverns from shooting. With my Carnifex.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, DAC effects with the 2 Twin Ink Devourers.
Yep.
I think I got side armor or something like that.
Yeah.
It went pop.
They were quite poorly positioned on my half, actually. I should have probably worked a bit better.
Yeah, but I think I killed those, and I think towards the end I got into assault with... Was it Pask?
Yeah, you killed Pask.
I think I killed Pask with my Flying Hive Tyrant. I dropped down for a turn. Luckily, there was a lot around him, so... You couldn't quite target just that model.
No, which is the downside of having the 2 battle tanks is that it's templates. So the templates are always going to... Well, all of my... And the Eradicators are templates as well.
Yeah.
So it's never going to really work in that respect. I think I did try and ballsy and shoot it, and then it just fell back on me and I killed myself.
Yeah, so, I think that did happen, yeah, actually. Yeah. Can't remember exactly what happened. But
so your flyer weird ugly thing was about to attack Pask, and I thought, you know what, one last shot, I'll try and kill it before it goes for my HQ. And place the template directly on top of you, and then it scattered back the 9 inches that I said, oh, I only need 9 inches to hit myself. 9 inches back on top of me. And then somehow managed to blow and kill myself.
Yeah, I think you blew up your own tank.
Yeah, pretty good. I'm really good at shooting.
Yeah, but yeah, to be honest, I really needed it that game. I mean, my Dima had lost a lot of wounds by the time it got to your knight.
Yeah.
Because you rightly targeted it, which, you know, any good player would. And then your knight just de-weaponed it in the face. And that was it.
Took the D. I think the best part about the game for me is I'm still learning, so I'm still learning really how to use my knight and where to put it and how he's meant to play. So none of the games I've had so far have just been, I'm really bored, this is really boring, I'm just running forwards, or I'm staying back and shooting. So it's quite cool for me in that respect. And it was my favourite game this month.
It's the only game you played.
Well, it still had to be my favourite.
Yeah, true. I mean, it was a good game. I didn't not enjoy it, and I don't want people to think that I was really like, oh, I'm not winning, it's rubbish.
Well, the end result you put was Sam destroyed me.
And that's exactly what happened. I had 3 Gene Stealers left on the board at turn 5.
Yeah.
And you had everything bar your Wyverns and your Pask tank, which you blew up.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And it was just that one-sided. And I can't necessarily say what that was down to. And I think that's maybe the problem. I feel a little bit like, oh, I don't think I did anything wrong. I just got whooped and I don't really know why. And that's kind of, I found that quite difficult. I try and learn from each of my games and evolve my battle plan and play around with my list to kind of finalize it. And I can't quite tell you why it was so one-sided. It just was. I mean, your Imperial Guard list is very strong. And my Nid one is quite experimental. I mean, the thing was my monstrous creatures did what they needed to do.
Yeah.
My Gene Stealers were just a non-part. I think that was one of the big problems.
Okay.
And Gene Stealers there's something about them. They were very nearly my pain for this month because they're just so overpointed for what they have. Like, they have an amazing attack if they get there, but their 5-up armor save just means they don't.
Yeah.
And they need something. They either need all the time stealth, just to give them a cover save even in the open, something like that, or to drop in points and stay the same, I'd be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're more than a marine each with a 5-up armor save.
Yeah.
Now, like I say, if they get into combat, they'll rip apart a marine. But
I suppose that's the sacrifice.
It doesn't happen
isn't it?
In this game. This current climate. I mean,
maybe they're not so much the way I've experienced you play them is I run towards the enemy taking the casualties. Maybe they're not that anymore. Maybe they're the hide in the space hulk where people to walk past and jump.
Yeah, the only problem with, and I would agree with that, and I've been trying to adapt to that a bit more.
Yeah.
But when you're playing an all tank army that's, you know, rightfully so, pretty much sitting still.
Yeah.
And just shooting their long range templates. Like, the only thing I could do was run at you. I think that was the thing. I just kept losing Gene Stealers, and it was like, okay, they've done nothing, they've done nothing, they've done nothing.
What do they have? So, because you killed a tank with one of them.
They got Rending Claws.
So they can, they're strength 6.
Strength 4.
Strength 4.
And 6 is to glance.
Yeah.
Because most things are armor 10 on the rear.
Yeah.
But then if you get a 6 in the glancing phase, in that wound phase, I guess, it becomes extra D3.
So
you can pen vehicles
actually,
really
they're really good at taking out tanks.
If they can get there. Yeah.
But then that's like any unit.
Well, yeah. The interesting thing is everything Ben was chatting to me about the Gene Stealers and the tactics. And there's actually a Gene Stealer formation I haven't looked at yet, which is the Broodlord hunting pack.
Right. Okay.
And at the moment, I take the Manufactorum Gene Stealer formation, which is 5 groups of 5.
Okay.
Which allows you to infiltrate up to 6 inches if you're in building or ruins. Now, up until now, I haven't actually played a board where I've been able to utilize that. I haven't played a city board that's had buildings within, you know, just outside of 6 inches from my enemy.
Yeah.
It just hasn't happened.
No.
So that's been a little bit of a toughie, I guess. So, you know, if I play on the right board, that formation could suddenly be amazing.
Yeah.
But it's quite situational. Whereas the Broodlord hunting pack seems a bit different. And I won't go through the rules because I'm not entirely sure on them just yet. I'm still kind of learning them, but I think I might give those a go and see what happens.
Worth a bash.
Yeah, I don't need any more gene stealers. It involves exactly the same amount that I have. It just means that the 3 10-man squads and the Broodlord become my formation, and the 25 gene stealers that are currently my formation become my normal troop choice.
Yeah.
So it's just a switch out. So yeah, I'm going to give that a go. But like I said, I enjoyed the game. I got my butt whooped, and I hope that this Saturday my nids will redeem themselves, kicking guards' teeth in.
Good.
More guns, though.
More guns.
He's going to have a lot more men than you did.
Yeah, 3K.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And a Baneblade.
And a Baneblade.
It's going to be painful.
I can forget the template if you want.
No, bring it. I want to play it. I want to blow it up with my Barbed Theridor.
Good.
Anyway, what were you looking at?
Well, basically, after last episode, it was quite... My pain was very much aimed towards Forge World not producing 40K related goodness anymore.
Hand in your mouth.
Exactly. And then, as lo and behold, a couple of days later, or a couple of weeks later, they bring out the updated Imperial Armour Siege of Rax. Like, it's like they listen to the podcast.
Well, I don't want to say... I definitely don't... I'm not calling you a hypocrite.
Yeah.
But my argument was that Imperial Armour books that, you know, are the 40K part, and they are updating them. It just so happened that nothing had happened for you.
There's just so few and far between, though. That was the point. They don't happen. Like, so every month, or every time I open that blog post from the Forge World app, there is a 30K related something being released, or this is happening in 30K.
Yeah.
The point I suppose I was trying to make was 40K happens, but like 6 months apart.
Yeah, but so does the main stuff of 30K. Really, the books are nearly a year apart.
Not new units, because obviously they're in the books, but the new models are released quite frequently.
Fairly, yeah.
So I was quite pumped with the fact they were releasing the Imperial Armour and the Siege of Rax. They're combining three. Volumes 5, 6, and 7 of the old Imperial Armour together.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Which is cool.
Does it make the book more expensive?
It's £57 for the book, is 288 pages. I think it has to be 19p a page.
Yeah, it's not bad. And having an Imperial Armour book now in the NID one, and Fillion Project, that's it. They're so worth it. They're so nice.
Well, there's so much in it. Like,
like you say, it's got three Imperial Armour books basically in it.
So they've got the Red Scorpions, Grey Knights, World Eaters, Death Corps of Krieg, some knight stuff in it.
That'll be new.
Inquisition Lord and Inquisition and a Demon Prince.
Okay, that's probably the corn one that they do.
Yeah, so that's there's quite a lot in it. So I'm buying it. I will buy it.
Yeah.
Maybe not this month, because at the moment I'm running my guard as guard rather than as Krieg. That is sort of
that's kind of the next
models.
Step, isn't it? You
know? Yeah, and then at that point
the book's not going to sell out. It's not going to go anywhere.
No, at that point it becomes let's tailor it to more towards being guard Krieg
and make it a bigger thing.
Krieg forces, a Shadow Sword, probably looking at bigger tanks.
Yeah,
I also saw 6.
They look
mortars
cool.
On. Yeah, I sent you the link. So cool.
You watching those?
Yeah, the 210.
Have you let that Shadow Sword go?
Yeah, I have.
Oh.
But you told me to.
Well, we were recording.
I don't know.
Have a look.
Hang on, let's have a look.
Under my MISC, I don't really have anything. I've been trying to read some Black Library books and failing. I'm still kind of the first chapter in on the latest Space Wolf novel.
It went for £47.
It failed.
What are they, like an 80 quid kit?
I can't remember. I think they're less than that. 60.
I blame the recording. I don't want to do this anymore.
Shush. But yeah, I've been trying to read Black Library books and just struggling. And I think, I don't know, Master of the Forge have really helped me out with, they've been doing the Battle of the Fang review recently.
Yeah.
But Master of the Forge is another podcast, which is quite cool.
Definitely worth checking them out if you're into doing some abnormal gaming.
Yeah, play your style. That's kind of their motto, isn't it?
Yeah,
so yeah, they're cool. But they've done a Battle of the Fang review, which is my favourite Space Marine battle book. A really good review, a few special rules, like we say, for you to kind of play out the book. And that's kind of, I don't know, revitalized my love of Space Wolves as well as doing Bjorn this episode. So hopefully I'll be able to pick up that book and really hammer out a lot of pages in the coming month. But yeah.
Is that it?
I think that's it. That's not too bad considering we didn't really have that much to talk about.
No, I think, like I said, I'm going to try and do some more. I want to kind of focus a bit more on Warhammer for the next couple of weeks just because Salute's coming up.
Yeah, that's not far off now.
No, April's just less than... Well, we'll record again one more time.
Twice.
twice.
March and April is April's 21st. That week.
Yeah. So we were recording that week. So
we're going to be stupid excited on April. We're going to be like, salute in 2 days.
So obviously those for Salute that don't know, it's a convention run in London at the Excel Centre by the South London Warlords. It's not just Warhammer. They have loads of different game systems there, which is always quite cool to pick up some very ad hoc and unique pieces for gaming. Me and Matt are going to be there. Probably going to go to the pub, which is there. The Dog and Bone, is it?
Something like that. The Overlords will probably do their normal thing.
Yeah.
And we'll just go and meet them and hang out. That'll be really cool.
Have a couple of pints.
We'll be wearing our T-shirts. You need to order one still.
Yeah. And then just come down. Yeah. Give us a chat.
Say hello.
Buy us a pint or something.
Buy us a pint. Cheeky.
But yeah, so other than... I need to get ready for Salute.
Yeah.
I need to get pumped.
Yeah, work out what we're going to buy.
Okay. Oh! I don't know. I would have started my new job by then as well.
Anyway. That's the end of our first segment. We'll be back after a break with our second. Hey guys, Matt from the Adeptus Terra podcast here. Just want to take this moment and advertise our Facebook page with you. If you want to get involved and share your thoughts and your feelings about this podcast, about what you'd like to see, or even share some of the stuff you're up to, we love seeing your hobby progress. Go to www.facebook.com/ the Adeptus Terra podcast, and we'll see you there. So welcome back. This is our second segment, Pain and Joy of 40K. This is where we just chat about the things that we're struggling with and the things that we're loving. We've got a few things to share. We've got a really cool one over our Facebook page. So thanks for that, Matt. Not me, but another Matt. Confusing, I know.
Too many of you.
But yeah, so we're going to talk about that and our feelings about that. But don't know. What's your pain? Let's start with you.
Start with me. Okay, yeah. Cool. So my pain for this month is pretty much not hobby fatigue, but I mentioned earlier that I was trying to do some painting and basically just lost all motivation. It's the fact that January has come around. I was really like, I had like 9 games in January,
crazy
painted
games.
So much, and then got all this loads of lovely Warhammer dumped on my doorstep, and then it was just like blah.
Yeah. Do you reckon it's because it's been too much almost? Kind of used up all your hobby energy in 1 month or something.
No, the main source of my games are playing on a Saturday at the club and then playing on Wednesdays. And the last Saturday the club was on, I was away with the cadets.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the Wednesday stuff has sort of fizzled out because I had like my interview and stuff and sort of was trying to prep for that.
Yeah.
And then after the interview, I wasn't really up for socializing and gaming. So I think because of my normal standard hobby time has been taken away, my normal standard gaming time has been taken away because of other stuff, it means that I haven't really been picking up my Warhammer. So getting out of the cupboard,
having a look at it
and painting stuff. So, and well, I think my next thing for my guard is a Chimera. They're just really boring.
Yeah, rhinos were always so hard to paint.
Do you know what? I love painting rhinos.
Oh, really?
Like, that was my favourite thing to paint. Like,
oh, okay.
And I only have, what, 3 of them?
Yeah.
But they were really cool to paint. But Chimeras are just, I don't know, I find them really boring.
It seems like I have this permanent struggle with painting specifically in starting.
Okay.
Like, once I get going, I remember that I quite enjoy painting. But until I look at that model undercoated and I'm like,
nope.
No, not going to happen today. And that's why I've got so many half-finished things.
Yeah.
I just think, oh, can I do that? And that's why I've been trying to force myself to get this building done. So, I don't know. I find that recently as well, this isn't my pain, but I really feel it. I've been feeling the same thing.
Yeah.
I've been watching quite a lot of battle reports, like even more than usual. Like, I've been laying in bed, not really sleeping because I've been thinking about work. And then I've been like, all right, I need to take my brain off of work, put on a what they call battle report on YouTube. And I found a couple new channels, which are really cool. But they don't post every day. And I found myself literally going to their page after about a week and a half, catching up on all their things and stuff. I was like, Oh, there's not a new one. Oh,
you're basically a crack addict.
Yeah, that's genuinely.
I need another hit, man. Yeah. There must be another video soon.
I was really freaked out by it because I suddenly thought, am I really going on YouTube that much, like every single night for a few hours, to watch battle reports of a hobby and being frustrated that there wasn't any.
Yeah.
And then what I've found is because of that, I kind of snapped out of that bit a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But what I'm finding now is I'm like clicking on one, watching the armies, and then just turning it off.
Yeah.
So I don't want to watch it because I've almost, oh, I know what this guy is like. I know what he says. I know what the game's going to be like.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. I've almost over familiarized myself with it.
You're desensitized yourself to the situation.
That's the word. Yeah. Just like, oh, I'm not that interested. And I found that that's kind of leaked into my hobby a little bit.
I think with the painting, so like I said, I painted like the red on a Terminator shoulder pad. I got to that point and it was like, this looks rubbish. I'm not doing it. And then just stopped painting. And I think it was the, because with the guard stuff, I've been spraying it with spraying it all the red, all the beige and all the brown.
Yeah.
And it just being a case of, right, wash it all over.
Get into a rhythm and sometimes that can be a bit monotonous.
Exactly. And I can deal with that. I can deal with painting the tanks because tanks are quite fun to paint. I love painting vehicles.
Oh, I find vehicles so hard.
See, Terminators are so boring.
Like, yeah, no, I can take, because I like to paint a dude at a time.
Yeah.
Like, I tried the whole conveyor belt thing, and I talked about that a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
But I found that really hard with my Tyranids. And actually, picking up one model from start to finish, I love doing that. But a tank, I think, takes longer.
Yeah, no, so, I love
it. So, yeah.
I think what I need to do is basically just take a man uphill and sit down and do some painting. I think it's the sheer laziness of, I've been getting into House quite a lot.
Yeah,
on Netflix.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah,
just basically going, I could watch House, or I could paint this really annoying model that I don't really want
to
paint.
Yeah, this links to my pain, so I might just carry on the conversation. I found myself getting distracted because of that desensitization.
Right.
Just kind of a bit like, right, I'm at home and I'm actually awake, and what shall I do? Oh, I could paint that building, or I could paint that orc, or I could paint that space wolf. Or I could play on my Xbox, or I could watch a film, or I could watch...
Do something where I don't actually require to think?
Yeah, just laze around and do nothing. And yeah, that's just been kind of my problem, really. I've just been distracting myself with other things.
Yeah.
And although, you know, I don't want to get too hard on myself, sometimes you do need that bit of break. Sometimes actually getting in from work, being really tired because it's been a long day, and just watching a DVD that you know you don't have to think about. That's really, you know, appealing.
And maybe after painting the 1750 points of the guard to start with, and I've only got a few squads left, it just being a... I'm tired.
Struggle to finish.
Thanks.
But yeah, so that's what my...
Actually, no, let's not leave that point. Who actually had a completed 8,000 point force? Me.
Yeah.
So I don't have struggled to finish.
Well,
how's your nids doing? Are they still grey? How's your space wolf doing? Are they still grey?
I still own them all.
And? Now?
Yeah.
I buy and paint as I go.
Yeah, I know. That's my problem.
How's eBay?
Yeah, I've been good this month. Let's not go back into that. But yeah, I've just been getting distracted. And sometimes I think I've used my time wisely by not painting. But there's definitely been times this month where I've thought, oh, I could do a bit of painting. Nah, I'm going to be lazy.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help the show. For one, you know, we need things to talk about for you guys.
Absolutely.
But also just doesn't help my own personal hobby, and I love this hobby. So that's bummed me out a little bit.
Joy. Let's move on to sad.
Yeah. Let's move on to some joys, and we'll come back to Matt's pain.
Okay.
To kind of finish off, if that's cool.
Yep.
My joy, I've kind of already mentioned, is the Space Wolf stuff. So Master of the Forge covering Battle of the Fang, the little bit that I have read of that Space Wolf book by Chris Raitt. Stormcaller. It's been really good so far, and I just wish I'd kind of read a bit more, actually, so that'll be cool to do. It's just really inspired my return to Space Wolves, as it were. One of the other things I've been struggling with is kind of I focused so much on my Tyranids that my other armies have just sat there and not been looked at, not been touched, and this has kind of made me go, oh yeah, I really want to play Space Wolves. I really want to, you know, play Beyond the Fellhanded, which we'll talk about later.
Beyond the Rockfist. You know,
I finished my conversion of Ragnar Blackmane, and I shared that in a past episode.
Cool.
And he hasn't been played yet, so that would be really cool to play that model. I've been kind of fired up about Space Wolves again, which is nice. I think that game that I played with you, the Tyranid game, has kind of almost made me go, oh, Nids, I feel a bit disheartened about them.
Yeah.
Put them to one side. and then, right, let's pick up my Space Wolves. The only reason I'm playing Nids on Saturday is because, one, Ben wanted to play me, and he's got some new IG units. He wants to play his Baneblade, and I've got my Barbed Herodal, so I really want to play that.
Yeah, of course.
So this, in some ways, this is almost a bit of a, not a last hurrah, but let's play the Nids one more time, have a really fun game with a friend, and then back into Space Wolves.
Okay.
That's kind of my plan. So, yeah, my joy is kind of looking forward to that. I've been writing a few lists, kind of coming up with new battle plans, getting really excited. So yeah, Space Wolves.
Cool. I think my joy is probably the new micro-releases that GW are doing.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we've had the Harlequins in the last month. Obviously, I try not...
Still going.
Through, yeah. I don't really like talking about specific launches because, obviously, it dates the podcast.
Yeah.
But the fact that GW are moving more towards a micro launch is really cool. It means that they're not just doing a, here's the new codex, now everyone go play that one, it's the meta. They're actually doing like a, oh cool, let's look at small Harlequin sort of force. Like the...
They are crazy rules though.
Yeah, but you cannot have a complete Harlequin army.
Well, yeah, you can.
As in like a 2K army.
Yeah, it's got a codex.
Yeah, but you... Yeah, it'll be really awesome.
Yeah.
But you could do it from the air, and you could just kill them, and they'd never be able to do anything with you because they have no.
I haven't looked into them enough.
So it's stuff like that where because they're doing these micro add-on to your army releases, yeah. So like add-on to the Eldar, like the Assassins, you can have an Assassin's force.
That was such a cool release.
Exactly, you can have a small Assassin's force, but
actually
never enough
thinking
for
about
an army.
It as well. Like thinking about it, the Legion of the Damned are exactly that.
Exactly.
You can play a whole army of Legion of the Damned, but
why
actually
would you want to?
They fit better in the fluff and in the game as an allied contingent. And that mini little data slate, mini codex thing, knights were kind of the real first thing of this.
I mean,
the Overlords just did their kind of year in review kind of thing, and they spoke about these kind of codexes and being really cool. And yeah, I want to see more. I want to see new ones in this year.
I think it's cool because it can add, I suppose the reason it's my joy is because it means you can add something completely different to your army,
yeah,
but not a lot of money. You're not starting a completely new force.
Yeah, you're just bringing an allied contingent in.
And
yeah,
it means that you can have a more varied game. So like I could, if I wanted to, go and add Harlequins to my Imperial Guard and write some random fluff as to why. Like,
yeah, you could do. They're intercepting some chaos because they understand that's a more deadly opponent than the Humies.
Exactly. And okay, you wouldn't be able to necessarily go take it to a tournament because I don't really know where the table lies.
I don't think
you could. But in terms of making your own fluff and going
yeah, you
along,
could do that.
You could do it.
Yeah. I think they work really well with Dark Elder.
Yeah.
Looking at it, even their vehicles look very Venom-y.
Yeah.
So that would be cool.
The only thing that does annoy me is they got a well better enhanced collector's edition than Blood Angels got. I had a bit of a rant about it on our page.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because why do they get special edition collector's things? I didn't.
Just because they know it will sell because they haven't done a Harlequins deck in forever. I'm sorry, that's it.
I want the Blood Angel ones.
It's not happening.
I want the special blood drip.
No, you've got some.
Well, now I have.
Yeah.
I had to get someone to make them for me.
Yeah, well, there's your way around it, you see. But yeah, let's go back to... is that your joy?
Yeah, that's kind of it. Sorry, it sounds really short, but that just came to me.
No, I think that's quite a cool one. I'm looking forward to see what comes out after the Harlequins. There's all sorts of talk on rumours, but we're not doing that.
Nope, no rumours.
I'm going to ignore that. But yeah, so I thought I'd get up the comment. It actually came through 8 hours ago.
Eight hours ago.
So yeah, that's how recent, you know, we're up to the speed. And it's by a dude called Matt who's following the page, and if you haven't done that yet, go follow the page and you can join in too. We'd love to chat about the things that wind you up or you're loving in this segment. So yeah, in his words, I'm going to quote him, said, "I'd like to add a rant to your sections. It's about those guys who come in while you're playing a game, tell your opponent everything he's doing wrong and how he should beat you, and then when he does, ask to play you next."
So I'm playing someone, like say I'm playing Matt, and then some random weird guy comes in and goes, "Oh, you know, he's Blood Angels, so you could just knock out his vehicles and he's really slow." And that changes the game, the whole game dynamic.
Yeah.
I'm completely dominating Matt with the when he's playing his Nids, and this comes in and completely ruins it for me. Not necessarily that I feel the need to crush Matt while I'm playing him,
yeah,
but it's just the fact that we're having a game It's not like I go and tell him how to eat his cereal more efficiently. It's the fact we're having a game and he's basically come in and ruined it or told me the end of the book because he feels that he can see it from a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is, and I've found this in the past, you have someone who's kind of overwatching the game, say a third friend,
yeah.
You know, who's just hanging out. You know, it's really helpful to have people like that sometimes because when you're not sure on a rule,
line
you can ask their opinion, all that stuff, really helpful. But then, you know, you'll just get... I'm sure I've done it into people's games and just gone, you do realise if you just run that unit, you'll be on that objective.
Yeah.
And suddenly they win the game on that. And then I'm like, oh, man, I shouldn't have interfered.
Yeah.
And I try not to do it, but I definitely have in the years I've been playing, a couple of times at least. And I think what Matt's talking about is these are the people who want to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, these people, like they're evil. They're not evil people. They just, maybe they love the game that much, they just can't help themselves. I think the advice I'd give to someone, and if you are like that, you're not evil, but, you know, it
stick
does upset
your nose
people.
Out.
Well, it's less than that. It's just, it does upset people and, you know, and can sway a game so much that both people aren't having fun.
See, completely, at the end of a game, if I'm say I was playing Matt and Matt beat me, I'd happily be like, what could I have done differently to change that game?
Yeah, chatting about that at the end is great.
Because that's awesome. It's the hindsight. It's the what did I learn from that game. But someone going in and telling me what I can do to win or telling Matt what he can do to win, it's just kind of like you have no place here.
Yeah, it's like interrupting and putting your spin on things when you haven't been asked.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If someone was watching and I said, oh, as long as you don't mind, Sam, can, you know, whoever, Neil, give me a bit of advice here.
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, I'm fine with that. And then Neil went, oh, well, I'd probably target that. That's cool because you're involving more people and you can do that.
Which is fine. And in a group like we have, that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah, and that's cool. But yeah, when it's you just kind of walk up and go, oh, I don't know why you're doing that. Why don't you do this?
Yeah.
I think some people just need the superior feeling.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm a better gamer, so listen to me. And, oh, look, didn't it work? And, oh, can I play you next? And I think that's the thing. It's like, can I play you next? Because I helped him win. So what am I going to do to you, you know?
I think it's important to say that I'm not knocking when people come up and watch
join
your
in.
Game and sort of ask you questions about your army, how you painted them. That's cool. Like,
yeah.
I'd happily talk about my army to anyone who comes and talks to me. But it's the point where they come over and interfere with the normal running of your game. Is the bit that I don't like, and that I suppose that is the pain that Matt.
Yeah, I think that's what he's kind of getting at. The people who just butt in, interrupt, completely sway a game, and then are almost smug about it, and then try and take you on. You know, I've had it once where someone's kind of done that to me and said, "Oh, yeah, well, play me next, and I'll teach you what I taught him." You know, almost like he was doing
me a
favour.
You are not the Oracle.
Yeah. It's like as if he was doing me a favour. And happily, I can tell you that I played him and beat him. but you know, yeah, I can really relate to that struggle. So thanks for putting that up on our Facebook page. If the advert hasn't happened yet, go like our Facebook page.
Let us know any pains and joys and we'll discuss them.
Yeah, I'd love to. It lengthens the show, which is really cool. We love sitting here and chatting it all through. It gives us a new perspective. We really agree with what he put up. We had a really good email from a guy, I think it was Jack.
Yes.
About Blood Angels. I'll check now, make sure I've got the name right. But about Blood Angels, and he listened to our latest episode, the one before this. Yeah, it's Jack. And he wanted a bit of advice. And I mean, we're not anywhere near
professional.
I guess professionals, yeah.
All-knowing.
The oracles. But we were happy to throw our two cents in and give him our opinions, shared about Black Library books because he wants to get more into the fluff. And, I mean, that was really inspiring for us, you know, motivating us to do this show. Like we said, this is our sixth show, this is our sixth month, and it has been a joy, and we've loved doing it, and it's been amazing. And the support you guys have given us has been amazing. And being able to see us affecting you guys, wanting you to hobby, wanting you to learn more about the fluff, has really just motivated us to do this more and more. So I'm not saying we're going to do it more regularly because we can't do that. We wouldn't do it well, at least right now. But we love bringing you this show every month, and that really is a joy. So it feels like it fits right into this section.
Fantastic.
So yeah, let's wind this up and not chat any longer. and move into our third segment. We'll see you after a break. Welcome to our third segment of the show, 40K Spotlight, and the light is shining brightly on awesome character of the fluff, Bjorn the Fell-Handed. He's a Space Wolf Dreadnought. He's awesome in-game, awesome background. He's one of the big reasons I love the Space Wolves alongside Ragnar Blackmane. And yeah, I'm really excited to bring that to you. I guess we'll start with who he is in 40K today and then do a bit of background on him, kind of how he got to that place. But yeah, we'll go straight into it. He's the oldest Space Marine still active in the 41st millennium.
So I imagine him walking along with a walking stick and in the old a white stained vest. So going, come back here! Yeah.
He might be like that if he wasn't in a massive suit that would kill you.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's got a white vest over his armour, maybe.
No. But yeah, some people think that Dante is the oldest Space Marine still alive.
Best Blood Angel Dante ever.
Yeah, gold shiny nipple man.
Yes. don't hate the nipples.
But he's the oldest living Space Marine who's still got his legs.
And doesn't need a machine to walk around with.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bjorn is exactly that. He's a machine. He's in a venerable dreadnought. He's, you know, lost a lot of his limbs, if not all of them. He's plugged in, he can't get out and move around. He has to be in stasis quite a lot, and that's what the toll of 10,000 years of his life have taken on him. But he's still really revered among the Imperium. He's one of those legendary heroes who walked with the Primarchs.
Yeah.
He's feared by quite a lot of Chaos. There's a few comments in the Chaos Codex, actually, funny enough, about, you know, meeting Bjorn is like meeting death on the battlefield, and that's the followers of Chaos. So he's, you know, he's a boss.
Cool.
He's often relied upon for his counsel with the Great Wolves.
Okay.
So the Great Wolves will wake him out of stasis only in the dire need, when a battle really is at a crunch point and they need some advice and also his prowess and his skill, because no one fights like Bjorn. You know, his dreadnought is modified. He's got special weapons. He's got his 10,000 years of knowledge and battle lust in him. And yeah, there's something about him that just inspires all the Space Wolves as well. Because he's the guy who walked with Russ. He was Russ's best mate. You know, he's the guy who knows the Primarch. And not even any Space Wolf today knows what the Primarch was really like, other than the sagas that are shared.
Yeah.
And often they're shared by Bjorn. So he's a really cool character. And that's kind of who he is today, but I'd like to kind of go into the story, if I may.
Just on what he is today, obviously, because he's in a Terminator, because he's in a Dreadnought armour, does that not mean that he's going slightly senile? Because obviously he's 10,000 years old. That's got to take some killer, even a Space Marine brain is going to get a little bit messed up.
Yeah, he is starting to struggle. There's a really cool story, which we will get to towards the end.
Right, okay.
Where that's kind of happening. And he's kind of, I guess, we're in this kind of weird 40K end times, which is a phrase that lots of people are throwing around out there as rumours.
Yeah, yeah.
But we are in, you know, the 13th Black Crusade is coming. Is Chaos going to overwhelm everything? What's going to happen? Bjorn's in this stage of where he's just starting to deteriorate. He's starting to be noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually, in his rule set, he's got a little bit less of a ballistic skill and a weapon skill.
Yeah.
Like a little bit lower. Which doesn't hurt him too much in gameplay, but also just is that because he's so old and he's starting to lose it a bit. So yeah, that's definitely happening.
Cool.
And it's really interesting when you read about that in the Black Library books. It's almost like this hero who people don't want to think of him as losing his
hair.
He's
going bald.
Losing his prowess.
Okay.
You know, it would be like, you know, watching a loved one deteriorate from age.
Yeah.
You know, like a grandparent or something, you know, I've had to go through that myself. And you remember them for their heroic tales, for, you know, how you remember them, not how they maybe were just before death.
Yeah.
And the Space Wolves, there are a few that are in the know and know what's happening with Bjorn, who are really kind of starting to lament and worry, and how are they going to share that with the wider Legion, and how is that news going to be received in the Imperium? And yeah, it's quite an interesting part of today's background.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get into Bjorn and where he started. So we kind of first hear about Bjorn in the end of the Great Crusade. So this is just before the Heresy. He's just a kind of standard Space Wolf. He's like a Grey Hunter at this time. I suppose the first real story we hear about him is at the Council of Nicaea.
IKEA?
Nicaea.
Oh, not Swedish meatballs.
No.
Right, okay, cool. No, sorry, just wanted
this
to clarify.
This is the council where the Emperor and a lot of Primarchs meet, and they talk about the librarians. And this is where they actually banish librarians. So this is where the Thousand Sons are told to stop playing with the warp, and various legions get told they're not allowed psykers anymore. Their psykers aren't allowed to use their powers. Obviously, you can't stop them being a psyker other than killing them, and they didn't want to go that far. But, you know, they weren't allowed to use their powers in battle and things like that.
Right.
Interestingly, some legions kind of got off the hook with that, Space Wolves being one of them. But I digress. That's another spotlight. Bjorn's there. He's kind of mentioned as an honor guard to Russ, but he's really there because his great company's rune priest has been asked to attend because he is a librarian.
Bjorn's a librarian.
No. Bjorn is accompanying his rune priest
right
from his great company.
Okay, cool.
So his rune priest is a librarian. It's the Space Wolf term for them, rune priest.
Yep.
And he's required by Russ, and the rune priest brings Bjorn along. So okay. Bjorn's not like this big hero who Russ even has noticed particularly.
Yeah.
He's just a Space Wolf run of the mill, and he just happens to be there in this big, big occasion. And then the next we kind of hear about him is in the Battle of Prospero.
Okay.
You know, the big bit of the Horus Heresy background where the Space Wolves come and are told to bring Magnus and the Thousand Sons in for reprimanding by the Emperor, and Horus changes the order and tells Russ that the Emperor wants Magnus dead and to destroy the Legion. So the Space Wolves, you know, the loyal dogs as they are, go in to rip them apart. And Bjorn's part of that. It's actually in this battle that he loses his arm.
Okay.
And yeah, he loses his arm in the Battle of Prospero. And there's a few different tales of it. So there's one of where he loses it to a demon. And then he's saved by Russ himself and other people. Then there's another tale where he kills a high-ranked Thousand Sun sorcerer.
Right.
But as he kills him, the sorcerer kind of lets off a kind of lightning bolt of psychic energy that fries his arm. And another Space Wolf lops his arm off to stop him dying.
Right.
It's traveling up his arm, and he needs to get rid of the arm. But yeah, we're not really sure what one's true anymore. It's kind of like faded into legend. But it was at that battle. And then on the way back from that battle, he still hasn't got an augmented arm because they lost so many people. So many Space Wolves died in
that
battle. There's so many others that need it. He's almost in the waiting line. As if he was in the NHS today. Yeah, waiting for his fake hip or, you know, prosthetic arm.
That'd be so cool if the NHS was like the apothecarium.
Yeah.
Because, oh, I've seemed to have got a gunshot wound. That's fine. Just
sit over there for 7 hours.
Sit over there for 7 hours and you'll be fine.
Bless him. but yeah, you know, so he's still got this kind of stump. They get attacked by Alpha Legion at this point, and Bjorn goes back into battle with a stump. He's basically got half an arm and his bolter arm, and so he's walking forward, shooting, defending his brothers, but he feels like he's, you know, he's lost his sword arm, he's lost his strength. You know, what makes Space Wolves so deadly is their close combat, and he feels that he's lost this. He can't defend his brothers. And he feels less of a Space Wolf for that. When he gets pulled back, because his arm gets even more mangled, his stump gets shredded, and it's pretty horrific, actually, in detail in the book.
Right, okay.
That it talks about it. It's like a short story. I can't remember the name of it. He goes back, and he basically gets sent by Russ to the Iron Priest. Now, an Iron Priest is a tech marine or a tech priest. And he's working on the battle barge, fixing up people, fixing weapons, loading bolters, doing all the tech marine-y stuff. And Bjorn kind of storms in and he's like, you must sort me out. I need an arm. I need a sword arm. I need to go and fight with my battle brothers. That's the only place I belong. and the Tech Marine just basically kind of laughs at him, like the Iron Priests in the Space Wolves are, like the only person who would tell them anything to do is Russ himself.
Right.
But they are so up there in the leadership of, you know, not even a chaplain or a Rune Priest. They're at the same level. And they're like, you know, their work with swordsmanship and metalwork and machine spirits is so highly regarded in Space Wolves. And it still is in the 41st millennium. So he doesn't back down. He says, get in the line. You're not next. I've got other things to do. You know, there's a war going on. Shut up. Get out of my face. And Bjorn kind of storms out, like wanting to kick his head in, but kind of not allowed. And he knows that not even he can get away with that. But as he's walking past, he notices this shiny thing in the corner. And it's basically an ornate lightning claw hanging on chains that's been made for some wolf lord. It's been made clearly for a high up there in the ranks special member of the rout of the Space Wolves. And he basically gets this tech thrall and says, who's that for? And he says, oh, I don't know. Do you want me to find out? And he said, no, just put it on. And the tech thrall goes, well, I can't disobey a space marine. So he sticks it on and Bjorn goes back into battle, and his first kill is actually an Alpha Legion champion who mangled his arm. He goes in and just shoves it straight up through his chin. Good. It's like this really cool bit of the book where he just rips the Alpha Legion champion, kills him. And this Space Wolf, who was his pack mate, can't remember his name, walks past him and goes, oh, we can't call you Bjorn the One-Handed anymore. And so they name him Bjorn the Fell-Handed because he's fallen, he's fell that Alpha Legion champion.
Right, okay.
You know, so that's where the name comes from.
Oh, okay, cool.
So he picks it up in the Heresy. Yeah, so Bjorn goes on with that new weapon of his and fights many battles.
How does he go to the toilet?
The claws retract.
Oh, okay, cool.
Lightning claws retract.
Well, yeah. Where do they go? I don't know.
Well, that's why when you actually look at the drawings of them in like the black the Forge World books Heresy, specifically, the fists are huge.
Yeah.
With the lightning claws, you can clearly see they just go up into the fist.
Yeah.
It's almost built in. A bit more slimlined in 40K modeling, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they go up into the big fist.
That's all right. That's the amazing. Go to the toilet. That's fine.
Yeah. And do other things too.
Like punch?
Yeah, punch with both hands. And then go, why am I not using these claws that are surrounded by lightning? but he goes on and he kind of stays at the rank, but he's known for his combat prowess and how strong he is. And he's quite a big space wolf as space wolves come. And he kind of builds up this quite big reputation. But during a battle on a world, during the scouring, I think it is, he becomes the first ever lone wolf. So for those that don't know Space Wolves, they are trained up as Blood Claws, which is like their initiate phase. Most have scouts, but they go straight into being Space Marines called Blood Claws. And when they ascend into Grey Hunter ranks, they'll start in a giant pack, you know, potentially up to like 50 Marines. And then they never leave those packs unless they're promoted or die.
Right, okay.
And those packs eventually get whittled down from warfare, and they don't add new recruits to them. That pack just gets smaller and smaller. And his pack's quite small at this point in this battle on this world, and they're fighting corn demons, and Russ is there, and it's this massive battle. And the rest of Bjorn's pack are killed by this greater demon. I can't remember the greater demon's name. It's like Agrax or something like that. It's very corny.
Very corn-like.
Yes, very corn-like. You know, greater demon, kind of bloodthirster, comes in, rips his pack mates and kills them. And Bjorn kind of fights him off single-handedly and nearly dies in the process. And he's kind of, you know, known for this great feat, but he won't take the applause. He won't take the praise from his other battle brothers because he's lost his packs. He's lost his pack mates.
Okay.
You know, the guys he trained with. And it kind of hurts him so deeply that he refuses to join another pack, which is the only time that it would happen before that. So if you were like the last survivor for some reason, then you joined another pack. But Bjorn just will not have it. He's like, no, I'm not joining a pack until I have my revenge. I need to avenge my battle brothers. And Bjorn is the first, possibly because of his link with Russ, and Russ kind of accepting his decision and holding his opinion quite highly at this point. Lets him do it. He says, okay, you can be on your own until you get your revenge. And he spends 5 years just alone, you know, not going to the great feasts and the banquets, not fighting alongside his battle brothers. He'll deploy on his own, fight on his own, try and kill the biggest thing. These are all the kind of things that we hear about lone wolves in today, in the 41st millennium. And it all kind of stems back to Bjorn being the first. He eventually gets his revenge, like I said, 5 years later, on the same greater demon. He re-emerges and Space Wolves combat go into it. And actually, Russ is fighting single hand-to-hand combat with this greater demon. And then other lesser demons kind of come in and distract Russ. And Bjorn sees this greater demon. And it's this big scene of him running across the battlefield and, you know, calling out the demon's name. And he slices and climbs up the demon's back while he's stabbing him with his lightning claw, shouting the names of his fallen pack mates.
Cool.
Like, almost like that's driving him onwards. That's making him faster, stronger, more deadly, because he's, you know, calling out the names of those fallen Space Wolves, his brothers. And when he slays the greater demon, when the greater demon dies and goes back into the warp, Russ is so impressed that he puts him into his personal honor guard. He becomes a wolf guard.
Yeah.
Which is like the highest honor, other than like your own wolf lord company, or obviously a great wolf. But at that time, there isn't one yet. I feel like I'm losing my voice.
Don't get ill.
No. So he's promoted into Russ's honor guard and follows him and protects him, and they get even closer and become great friends. And then when Russ leaves, this is kind of quite a big part of the narrative. He leaves and goes into the Eye of Terror, whether to find Magnus, whether to find a way of getting the Emperor off the Golden Throne. We're not sure. There's, again, lots of stories that have passed into legend. He leaves only Bjorn behind of his great company. And Bjorn find this really hard.
It's a bit of slap in the face.
Well, that's
you're good enough to protect me, however, you're not good enough to come with me to the Eye of Terror.
Yeah, well, and Bjorn finds it that way as well. And he battles with this. And even now, there's like hints of him really struggling with that. Like, why did you leave me? But the wisdom in it is, you know, this was Russ's best guy. If Russ was going somewhere where he thought he might not ever come back, you're going to leave your best guy in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bjorn, in the Battle of the Fang book, when he's a dreadnought, you know, this is M32, so we'll get to that in a minute, but he kind of is fighting as a dreadnought, and he starts to realize why Russ left him behind. Like, he starts seeing that actually, if I wasn't here, if I wasn't you know in charge of this legion, actually they might not make it.
Yeah,
they need a strong leader. And when Russ clearly isn't coming back, the Space Wolves name Bjorn as the first ever Great Wolf. So this is the first ever chapter master. This is the first ever leader of a legion that isn't a Primarch, at least for the Space Wolves.
Yeah.
Don't know where in the history, if other legions had done that yet or not. I suppose the Iron Hands probably did, because Ferris was long dead by then. But yeah, so he becomes the Great Wolf, and he pushes Russ's beliefs into the Space Wolves, and he drives them to scour the Chaos Traitors and push them back. And it all comes to an end for him when he fights a Warp Beast. And he fights a Warp Beast, which is, you know, kind of a giant demon, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, tons of tentacly arms. It's kind of like talked about as this giant blob of stuff. Goop. Yeah, kind of with, you know, fanged maw and claws and arms and hundreds of crazy eyes and...
Or the Michelin Man from Ghostbusters.
Yeah, like mix that with like, I don't know, an octopus and a spider's eyes. Something like that. Like, just weird.
A giant spider?
No, not a giant spider. But Bjorn slays this beast, but at the price of pretty much his own life. He goes into what's called the Red Dream. And the Red Dream is a way that the Space Wolves kind of describe them going into a coma. So they take so much wound, their Space Marine physiology puts them into a coma to sustain them so they can survive. and like all Space Marines have this, but the Space Wolves call it the Red Dream. And Bjorn is in this, and the Iron Priests know that the only way he can survive is by putting him in a Dreadnought chassis. So they place him in a Dreadnought chassis and wake him up, and that happens, and it works, which they're overjoyed with. And he actually leads the Legion for a while as a Dreadnought.
I was going to say, why didn't he carry on? Because I know there is a Dreadnought. Certainly, I know in the Blood Angel credits, there is a Dreadnought.
The Lamenters.
Yeah.
I think the Lamenters Chapter Master is in a Dreadnought chassis. It gives the impression that they're up all the time, but they're not. I mean, basically, he started for years as the Dreadnought and just stayed permanently awake and everything.
Yeah.
But because of the amount of chemicals that they have to pump through the half corpse, almost, to be honest, to keep it alive and keep it sentient, they need to go into stasis, otherwise they'd just burn out.
Right, okay.
Their life is just so on the balance. It's like a life support machine that can claw and shoot and run, and it's quite crazy.
Yeah.
So they have to put him in stasis. So he hands off his Great Wolf title to another. He appoints the second ever Great Wolf, and I always forget his name. It's very hard to say. And then that's what starts the tradition of there being Great Wolves. So you've got the first ever Lone Wolf, the first ever Great Wolf, and that's when he takes up the role of being the almost the council member. Like he's awoken, and automatic authority goes to him.
Yeah,
like he overrules the Great Wolf when he's awoken.
Right. Okay.
Like today, he is the. If he's awake, he is in charge of that legion. But while he's sleeping, the Great Wolf is in charge.
Yeah.
And there's no questions asked about that. No one ever challenges that.
I bet that'd annoy me. If I was a Great Wolf, I don't think I'd wake him up. My opinion, that's I guess he's so... isn't it? You wouldn't have that if you were a Space Wolf.
Yeah, well, they do. They're definitely prideful.
Yeah, but...
But it's Bjorn.
Yeah.
It's no questions asked, you know. This is a warrior of legend who fought on Prospero, who fought next to the Primarch,
yeah.
who is might as well be as good as the Primarch for the roles he took up. You're going to give up your power for him. And, I mean, the Great Wolf only becomes second in command. And to be honest, Bjorn has the authority, but he only counsels. So he says, oh, I think we should do that. If the Great Wolf goes no, then it doesn't happen.
Okay.
You know, it's not like he goes, oh, I'm the Great Wolf now, you are nothing.
Away.
The Great Wolf still has command, but he feeds off the advice and the counsel of Bjorn.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the role that we get to today, this kind of kick-ass Dreadnought who's in stasis a lot and then gets woken up to give counsel, to give aid, and to kick butt.
Yeah.
And that I really like him all the way through. I mean, I can't wait. I suppose this is hopeful, but I hope that Forge World come along to build a model of Bjorn before he was in a Dreadnought. That'd be so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And lots of people have done it, but it's not going to be the same until they do it.
Yeah.
And hopefully they do, because he's quite a cool character, you know. And like I say, during the Heresy, he's just a Space Wolf. He's just doing his thing. And he kind of builds his own saga, which is so the Space Wolf way.
Yeah.
And it's not until the Scouring and afterwards where he really starts taking command and becoming this big figure.
Okay.
But this gets us to where we are. This gets us to the 41st millennium and him as a Dreadnought, like I've said. I just wanted to share two stories that are in Black Library novels about him as a Dreadnought. So the first one is, I've already mentioned, the Battle of the Fang, which is M32, so kind of the end of the Great Scouring after the Heresy, kind of pushed everyone back to the Eye of Terror. And the Space Wolves start a thing where they call it the Great Hunt, and they go out looking for Leman Russ once every 50 years or 100 years. I can't quite remember how long the gap is. But they go out looking for Leman Russ. And to be honest, it's more of a excuse to just pile into the Eye of Terror and kill as much chaos as possible. You know,
right.
But the Great Wolf at the time is mad about finding Magnus the Red. He wants to just go and finish off Magnus. So he takes off. I mean, I don't want to go into the whole story, but he takes off 11 of the 12 great companies and leaves one on Fenris. And Magnus takes that opportunity to invade Fenris with the whole of the Thousand Sons that are left. And it's an amazing book, and read it, because it's genuinely one of the best, I personally believe, books that they've written. And there's just towards the end, Bjorn goes face to face with Magnus, and it's an epic fight. And Magnus kind of looks through the eye slit of the dreadnought sarcophagus and meets, you know, what's left of Bjorn's face, and realizes that this is a guy who was on Prospero. Mm. This is a guy as old as him, you know, almost, you know.
Yeah.
And it just makes it all the more special. And Bjorn's there shooting point blank with a plasma cannon and ripping into him with his claw. And Magnus is like trying to rip his dreadnought arms off because Magnus was that big as a demon prince. And such an epic fight.
Yeah.
And Bjorn nearly gets ripped apart. But
I always imagined Magnus the Red being the Lucifer character from South Park.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? He's known as the Crimson King, so maybe. But yeah, there's just this epic battle, which is really cool. And it kind of, when I read that book quite early on to doing Space Wolves.
Yeah.
And it was after I read that book that I was like, Bjorn is going in my army. Because at the time, there wasn't even a model for Bjorn. They've only just redone one. Well, there was, but a really old second edition, third edition metal model.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really small and just didn't want it. And now they do a plastic version. I've actually got the Forge World Space Wolf Dreadnought.
Yeah.
That I use as my Bjorn. He stands out that way. But I read that book and was like, I need this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then I started learning all the other background. The other story is, like we were saying, you know, 10,000 years has taken its toll on Bjorn. And it would on anyone.
Yeah, of course.
And it's the story. He actually comes face to face as a dreadnought with the Khorne Greater Demon that he slayed.
Oh, okay.
So the demon that killed his pack mates and made him the first lone wolf, and the one that he got his revenge with. And they fight, and there's this epic duel again, demon prince, greater demon, bloodthirster, versus, you know, this venerable dreadnought, you know, absolute killing machines, both of them, just, you know, one-on-one combat. And the Khorne demon is saying the names of the fallen packmates that he killed.
Yeah.
And Bjorn just ignores it and just carries on fighting and doesn't respond in any way. And there's this point where the Bloodthirster has kind of got Bjorn pinned to the floor as the dreadnought. So he's kind of just pinned him to the floor. He's about to do the killing blow. And for some reason, Black Library like to make demons kind of that arch nemesis enemy, like in cartoons, where I'm going to tell you my plan before I kill you and then you stop me.
Because
it's kind of about to do the killing blow and then says, oh, the saddest thing is you can't even remember your pack mates and I still do.
Yeah.
That's how immortal I am, rah, rah, rah. And then that happens and Bjorn kind of frees up his plasma cannon arm, shoots it in the face and rips it apart
and
kills it. But the interesting thing is this story is being retold by a wolf priest. And one of the Bloodclaws who's listening goes to him, oh, I saw that fight. And the wolf priest was like, oh, wow, wasn't it amazing kind of thing. And the Bloodclaw goes, but was the demon telling the truth? Does Bjorn not remember his packmates?
Yeah.
Does he not remember their names? And the wolf priest kind of looks to I think there's a rune priest there as well. It's kind of the eldership, the authority figure of the Legion.
Yeah.
And kind of they look at each other and then the wolf priest just turns and says, demons lie. Okay. And then that's all you know. So you don't quite know whether actually the demon was telling the truth and Bjorn has forgotten those packmates that he lost 10,000 years ago.
Yeah. Which is pretty understandable. I forget where my keys are when I go to work. So let alone remembering 10,000 years of names. I'm rubbish at names. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe it is true. Maybe he has forgotten that, which was such a big part of his previous life. Maybe the drugs and the amount of stasis time is starting to affect him. Or maybe demons do lie and he does remember and he just didn't raise to the occasion. It kind of leaves it for your own decision.
I'd like it to be the first one. I don't think I'd like him to remember. I think the deterioration of someone would far be more likely than the I'm not going to rise to this.
Yes.
Space Wolf. Space Wolf are always like...
Oh, they'll roar back, yeah. I believe it's the first one. And it's really nice kind of... tragedy of the hero. It's like he's been fighting so long he's almost forgotten his own name.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, they say now that when they wake up Bjorn, it takes a full day for him to even be able to speak.
Yeah.
It just takes that long for him to the stasis to wear off, and it's getting longer and longer, and he has to sleep for longer and longer before he can be safely awoken. Otherwise his body might just give up.
Maybe it's time just to flip the switch and pull the battery out.
He's if they ever write him out, it's going to be in a blaze of glory. He's going to go out like a space wolf. He's going to go out swinging.
What, hugging a bomb and just running into the, into the crowd.
Yeah, he probably would do that. Yeah. If he knew he was up, he'd probably just detonate in the middle of Chaos Forces or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the background of Bjorn, and he's so awesome.
The awesomeness that is Bjorn the rock face.
Yeah, I mean, before we finish this segment, I'd quite like to kind of go through his rules.
Yeah, no, of course, go ahead. So
I really need a drink, so can I hand you my codex and you maybe just share a bit of his rules?
Yeah.
Sorry, my voice is going.
No,
I'm talking too much.
Of course. So in the Space Wolf Codex, Bjorn is... Should we do points? No points?
No.
Well, you have to buy the codex to find out the points. Okay, cool. So Bjorn has a few special rules. Obviously, he's got Venerable anyway, which we all know is he's just super badass and can shrug off, make you re-roll dice, basically.
Yeah, you re-roll, like if you roll a vehicle destroyed result, you can go, re-roll that, please. And he might get immobilized, but at least he hasn't blown up.
No, of course. So another special rule that he has is called Ancient Tactician. An army that includes Bjorn the Fell-Handed adds 1+ to the siege initiative rolls it makes. See, this is cool because it basically will mean that you get that one little extra chance because he's that old, he knows all the tricks, he knows that they're not going to steal it, or they're not going to be able to go first because they will be able to, I don't know, throw him at the enemy somehow, that he gets that 1+. It's not OP because it's only 1+.
It's basically on a 5 or a 6, he steals.
Yeah.
And I've had it happen in a game only once now.
Yep.
In the last kind of 4 that I've played Bjorn. But it's just, it's a really cool kind of fluff that just talks about how badass he is, and it's cool.
Cool, yeah. And the another one is Ward of the Primarch. This is Bjorn the Fell-Handed has a 5+ invul save.
Yeah, so Dreadnought with an invul that's not a Contemptor.
So just looking at the model, in the picture in the codex, the ward, is it the lion? Is it as specific as that, or is it just a general...
I don't really know what the... It's not a lion anyway, it'd be a wolf, wouldn't it?
it looks like a lion.
It's the wolf. That's the Great Wolf symbol, actually.
Yeah.
Of the Wolf Among the Stars, I think is what it's called. But the Ward of the Primarch will be some kind of trinket that Russ had that is now on the body of Bjorn, and it's believed that that's what gives him his invul. You know, in the background, the Iron Priest probably just fitted some kind of force field to his armor.
Yeah,
but that's the
official name,
the totem that people perceive is his, good luck charm kind of thing.
The only thing about it, though, in the fluff, you said he had a plasma cannon.
Yes.
Why is the standard loadout a assault cannon?
Mate, it genuinely would be one of my pains.
Right.
In every Black Library book I've read, where Bjorn's in it as a Dreadnought.
Yeah.
He has a plasma cannon.
Well, it's a free upgrade to get a plasma cannon.
It's a free upgrade.
But why even bother?
Yeah, well, I don't know why. The old model had an assault cannon, so maybe there's some really old background where he used one. Do you know what? On the front cover of Battle of the Fang, Bjorn is on it with an assault cannon.
Right.
But in that very book, he uses a plasma cannon.
Maybe it's a homage to...
So I don't know why it's there. Maybe because you can just play him differently. Maybe there's something in the far back reaches that I don't know about, but plasma cannon seems to be his option. I mean, you can upgrade him to have a Hellfrost cannon or a Twin Las cannon, but I go for the plasma cannon.
I suppose if it's a case of... If you're a Space Marine and you're standing there and you've got 4 guns in front of you, a plasma cannon, a flamer, a bolt pistol and a bolt gun, and you're going to be facing NIDs, you'd pick up the flamer.
Yeah.
That kind of element.
And I imagine that, he's not only stuck to a plasma cannon, but like I say, every book I've read he's had a plasma cannon, that's what I play him with. But the really cool kit is he has a True Claw, which is basically a Dreadnought close combat weapon, except it's made to be like his ornate Lightning Claw was before he was a Dreadnought, so it's like a homage to that. And it gives him Shred and I think it's Mastercrafted as well.
What's that?
Have a look. Strength 10, AP 2.
Cool, always nice to have strength.
Dreadnought. Close combat weapon that's Mastercrafted and has Shred.
Cool.
But yeah, it's just a really cool little buff.
What's his saga? Like his Warlord trait?
His Warlord trait is Saga of the Majesty.
Right.
So it's re-roll leaderships and pinning tests and fear tests.
Because you're that.
Because he just inspires all the Space Wolves. It's like, I think within 12 inches of him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a bubble.
Get a good line of sight.
Yeah, yeah, they've got a good line of sight, so they re-roll their leadership and stay strong. I mean, half the units can become fearless pretty easily, but...
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so he's got some really cool rules. I think he's better than he was in the last decks. I've really enjoyed playing him. If you're a Space Wolf player, give him a go.
With the points cost, though, is he worth it in every game?
I think so. I probably wouldn't play him at like 1-5.
Okay.
Because he's like over 200 points, and I don't tend to play...
Named characters?
Named characters or high-pointed characters at that lower point cost.
Yeah.
I mean, most people tend to play 2K games anyway, I tend to see online, so
yeah,
he's easily fits into that. And he's really cool. And if you bring him and another HQ... Doesn't have to be your warlord, really. Like, I would take him as a warlord because, again, the background kind of presents itself that way. But yeah, I think he's a really cool character. I mean, all the background that we've just shared about him just kind of speaks for itself. And give him a go. I think he's awesome.
Is the fluff still there that if he falls, he becomes an objective marker?
No, they took that away.
That was cool.
It was very cool because it obviously highlighted how precious he was to the Space Wolves.
Yeah.
But it was very broken.
Yeah.
So he'd blow up and it was basically like, if the Space Wolves hold it, then it's 1 point. If the Space Wolves didn't hold it, the enemy didn't even need to hold it. They just got 3 victory points.
Okay.
And it was like something, it said something like, thus is the price of failure.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And although that was kind of cool, it just, yeah, I think they took it out just for simplicity.
I think that the line they normally take now with HQs is, he's not really dead because we don't like killing off HQs anymore, so we're just going to keep him alive.
And they kill off ones without models.
Yes, of course. But it's they were dragged off the battlefield by their battle brothers. So
yeah.
I suppose, although it's going to be difficult for them to drag a Dreadnoughtbite on their own.
Yeah, but, I mean, that was what the old objective thing was really.
Yeah.
It was like his remains, he's still alive in there, get there, save him. And if you do, you get a point. If you don't, then they get 3 points because you failed. It was just so broken. I think it stopped people taking him. And I think they wanted to, one, push the new plastic kit.
Yeah.
But two, just have him played more because he's such an epic character. And I'm really glad they took that away. It wouldn't stop me playing him. But I'm quite glad they took that away.
Have you got your model painted?
No. Still in the Forge World grey.
Right, okay.
Not even sprayed grey.
Not even sprayed grey.
No, he's sat there like, oh, I want to get better at painting before I do him. And I just haven't reached that yet.
Have you played him yet?
Yeah, I've played him lots. Right, yeah, okay. Yeah, and really fun. He's been my HQ in the last 3 or 4 Space Wolf games I've played.
Right.
And I've loved him, and I think I'm going to keep doing that. I think I'll trade him and Ragnar out because they're my 2 favourites.
Okay.
So, yeah, starting to play named characters a bit more.
Do you think that you're kind of going against the fluff by using him in every game?
Yes and no. I mean,
it's never linear.
The bottom line is, the bottom line is whether you're treating it as 500 years apart or 10 minutes apart. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters that way.
Okay. Has he got a flamer?
Yeah, he's got a flamer attached to his close combat weapon, heavy flamer.
Okay.
So, yeah, pretty cool.
Cool.
But, yeah, that's Beyond the Fell-Handed. Hope you enjoyed that segment. Hope my voice didn't bore you too much. And we'll be back after a break, and I've got my breath back for the last segment.
Hey guys, Sam here from the Adeptus Terra podcast. I'd like to take this opportunity to advertise you guys, actually. If you want to get in contact with us to advertise any gaming groups, Facebook pages, any other podcast, anything to do with 40k and the hobby, then just drop us an email on the Adeptus Terra podcast at gmail.com. That's the Adeptus Terra podcast at gmail.com. We'd be happy to have that conversation with you and hopefully get an advert going out for you. Thanks. See you soon.
So this is our last segment, Life in the Hobby. And this episode, we're talking about different ways to play games of 40K.
Awesome.
So, yeah, there's lots of different ways we can play 40K nowadays. Lots of old ways that we can readdress, but also lots of new. Shall we start with the rulebook? That seems the best
easiest
place.
And first start to jump off. So cool. The first one is the Eternal War missions. These are the old school ones that you probably remember in the 5th and 4th and 3rd and 2nd.
Yeah, they've all been adjusted over time, but yeah, missions.
They're the standard missions you play. To be honest, they're the missions that I play all the time. Very rarely do I go and play the Maelstrom ones. only every now and then. It's just because you need the cards and not everyone has
cards.
Yeah,
I like the Maelstrom as a good palate cleanser.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. The Eternal War missions then.
So you have six Eternal War missions?
There's six.
Yeah, Percy Alien.
Yeah.
Big Guns Never Tire.
Yeah. This is like a test. I love it.
I can tell you the game type.
So Purge the Alien
is kill points.
Yeah.
You then got objective markers.
Yeah. Well, there's all the other five are all objective markers.
Then I cover all the other five.
So you have Purge the Alien.
Yep.
Crusade.
Yep.
Big Guns Never Tire.
Yep.
The Scouring.
Uh-huh.
The Relic.
Good game.
And the last one done: Big Guns, Scouring, Crusade, Relic, Purge the Alien, and a sixth one. What is the sixth one?
I don't know. Do your rule book.
No, I don't have my rule book with me, actually.
What's your favourite one, then?
Do you know what? I play so many Big Guns Never Tire, and it's really weird. Like, it used to be that heavy support could hold an objective.
Okay.
You know, because normally it was just troops in 6th edition.
Yeah.
When that mission type came in. And now it's just that your heavy supports give away a kill point.
Yeah.
So it just feels, I don't know, it's a bit weird. I just like the standard Crusade, you know, D3 plus 2 objectives.
Yeah.
Roll for your deployment, just standard grab objectives. I think they're more tactical than just kill each other.
I quite like blunt object killing each other.
Yeah, it's fun. Sometimes it is fun, but I prefer the kind of tactful objectives. And I tend to win games due to how I place myself on the board and board control than how I killed the most.
Okay.
And I like that about it.
The Relic was an awesome game last edition. I loved playing Relic just because it was so...
it was new.
It was new. It was so different. It was the... Basically, whoever got the Relic first, just basically create a human wall of people to protect yourself and run away.
Yeah.
That used to be my favourite. And then I do quite, like I said, just like bludgeoning, killing people.
Yeah, Purge the Alien. But yeah, I mean, I've had some brilliant games in this kind of format in 7th. The one thing I find difficult is like the first blood, like you get that lucky shot, blow up a rhino.
Yeah.
You get that lucky shot and blow up a rhino and, you know, all suddenly I'm a point ahead and you could never achieve that point.
Yeah.
So I don't like first blood, which is, you know, in Maelstrom as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, these are general games, easy pick up play, roll a dice, there's your game type.
Yeah.
You don't, like you say, you don't need anything extra, you just need your army, dice, you know, your templates, all the normal stuff, and you just, there you go. And you can create an awesome story with just playing the rulebook.
Yeah, I just see these as the, I suppose the easy way to do it is bread and butter of 40K. Like,
yeah.
It's the first game you'll probably learn to play, like, when you come into the hobby. And it's probably the
most regular one as well.
Yeah, because it's easier just to do that than to take your Maelstrom cards with you. And then you've got to rely on other people to have Maelstrom cards. And
Yeah. So, I mean, we've mentioned Maelstrom a little bit, and this is another way that you can play 40K. Maelstrom came in with 7th edition, and it kind of reintroduced the playing with cards.
Yeah.
So it used to be in way back when playing 40K. And some of the cards, you know, are a bit funny, and it's a bit of a luck of a draw.
Yeah.
And I've heard all those arguments before, and probably so have you. So we're not going to talk about that.
No.
But I like him as a really good palate cleanser. Just like, do you know what? I've played a load of Eternal War missions. I want to do something different. Let's play Maelstrom. And, you know, just throw it out. And it's almost like, as soon as you decide to play Maelstrom, for me anyway, like, the pressure's off.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't play to win in the terms that determines whether I have a good game or not.
No.
You know, I play to win because it's a competitive game,
but
I play to have fun more than I do to win normally.
Yeah.
As soon as I play a Maelstrom game, the winning, it becomes completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
I'd find, I'm like, it's completely luck of the cards. I don't really care. My friend's over the table. We're chatting, having fun. Let's just go for it. And I find that, I tend to have really fun Maelstrom games. I don't know if I've had a bad one.
I think with the addition of the new chapter-specific cards...
Yeah, that's
or
been really cool.
Or army-specific cards, sorry. It's made the Maelstrom more appealing. Certainly, before I had the Blood Angels cards, I never used to like playing it. It was just go into this objective, now run back to this one. It just felt like I could effectively be faster than the enemy, which I normally am, and then I just outrun them to get to objectives, and then just avoid them killing me. But now I think with the Blood Angel ones, where I've got to do a lot of the assaulting stuff, kill stuff and assault, kill the HQ, kill 3 independent characters or whatever.
Yeah, the Orcs one is really cool for that. the Space Wolf ones are kind of similar, like get into the fight, kill the HQ, your warlord has to kill the other warlord, that kind of stuff. It's really thematic. It kind of makes you think of your army. So you kind of have more pride for those objectives, I guess.
Yeah, which is really cool. And really, it means that the you're not just doing a standard game, which I like. So I think since I've got the cards, I've played them more and more. And like I said, they are a palette cleansing type game.
Yeah, I don't think there's many people who play them as... I don't know. There's quite a lot of bat reps online where people were playing Maelstrom after Maelstrom. But for me, it's... I've played five games in a row. Let's play a Maelstrom.
The only issue I have with Maelstrom is that you can get, like, so when I played Harry,
it would have been a while ago.
When I played Harry last, it was very much that I got the early lead. So I got 7 points in the first two rounds or first round maybe. And then he was never going to catch up with that. A very, very, very...
Yeah, I remember that game. Yeah,
it's not like I don't like saying that I'm a good, I'm particularly a good gamer, but he was never going to catch up with seven lead points.
Yeah,
because on the first turn, it was the first turn, so he was never going to do that.
Yeah,
it was very lucky that I killed, wiped out two of his units, which was I killed more than one, and then in one turn, then you get the D3, and I got three, and then I had to be on my objective, the home objective. I just started pulling all my own objectives,
and then suddenly you're like, oh. So, yeah, it can have that effect, but more often than not, I think it's normally quite a close game, backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And like I say, in some ways, I kind of lose care on who wins.
Yeah.
And it's all about just having fun and blowing each other up, and that's cool. I mean, lots of people now have started, you know, doing their own thing. Like you say, you've got your own chapter cards. We went to the Overlords event that was awesome, and they created their own cards, and we've got those. So we've got another set that we can play with. I remember when we run our first tournament, here at the club, I built mission cards, very similar to the way Maelstrom works now, but it was just you drew one for that game, and I think that was the way it was done way back when in like third and fourth edition, when there was cards, maybe third, I can't remember, third maybe,
one of the editions,
one of those old editions. For you veterans out there, you'll know. But yeah, Maelstrom's just, like I say, another fun way of playing, and it's in our rule book. So you don't have to buy an extra book. You don't have to spend any extra money.
Nope.
Other than buying the cards, which are fairly cheap, to be fair. They're very well made as well, actually.
Yeah, I was really surprised.
Yeah, the boxes, really impressed.
The boxes are, although they're made of cardboard, are ridiculously strong.
Yeah.
And not something that's just going to fall apart in your bag.
Yeah, I was really chuffed with those. So they're the two rule books. Let's go into one that's had a bit of love over the last couple of years, I guess. Kill Team.
Kill Team started off in the Battle Missions book. I remember picking this up as kind of like, it's posted as a 30-minute game type one. You used to play it on your lunch break, that kind of thing. Complete lie. It takes a little bit longer than 30 minutes. You're never going to be able to play it in lunch break, and you're never going to be able to play it on your office desk.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to be able to run over the stapler. It's just impossible. But it is quite a cool, different way of playing. Each model moves as an independent unit rather than as one big unit.
Yeah.
It allows you to be a bit more strategic in terms of creating that quick... A-team style.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what really appealed me to it. It was like, I can build that squad that's, everything's a bit different. You get to upgrade three guys with special abilities, like, you know, Feel No Pain or Shred or, you know, all those special rules that we love. And you can model them differently to represent that.
And I have...
I really love that.
I have a five-man. I used to run as a veteran Blood Angel squad. But were all painted to be the
Death Watch.
Yeah. So they all had this. They all had the arms, the special guns, and the shoulder pads. And then they all were individually painted to their chapter.
Yeah, I remember you doing, and the weaponry kind of matches the chapter, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the Salamanders had a flamer. The Dark Angels had the plasma. Your guy was the assault. So the Space Wolf and the Lightning Claw were assault based. So it worked really, really well. I haven't really looked at it since we've. Got the new
Pirates. We had like a really big push in like, let's play loads of Kill Team, and then it was when they released the digital update.
Yeah,
so they brought a full new rule set, and it had six like of its own missions.
Yeah,
so it wasn't no longer just kill each other. Yeah, it had again a tactical edge, which I really enjoy.
Yeah,
my Kill Team collection is of collection. My Kill Team squad is of the Night Lord's First Claw from the Aaron Dembski Bowden books.
Bowden.
Sorry, I do that all the time. But yeah, so yeah, as a geek, I wrote down all the different armor that they were wearing in the book and made notes and bought all those bits. I shared that in the Using Forge World section last episode. But yeah, and I love getting them out and using them. And yeah, I've got Mercutian with a heavy bolter who's got Relentless because that's one of the special rules you can give.
I think it's cool because it's something different. So although I was using Blood Angel rule set, they weren't Blood Angels, they were Death Watch. So it was completely different to how I normally play. It's definitely one of those type of games that you can get caught up in. We used to go to Wayland and just have whole evenings of playing five or six games.
Yeah,
of
that's
Kill
true,
Team.
Yeah.
And then they've got the Infinity Boards set up, which are kind of like hab blocks.
Yeah.
So you play through those, which is quite cool. And then you get the one person that brings the three, is it the Wraiths on Necrons? Where they've got those spindly legs. And,
yeah, probably.
And some person brought those and it was a bit like, but it was cool. Yeah, it was a good game.
You know, if you want to really hammer out a hardcore list, you can. You know, there's far better out there than my Night Lords unit. You know, they don't tend to do that great because they're not kitted out for performance. They're kitted out to on the background of a book.
Absolutely.
And that's what I wanted to do, and I'm fine with that. But yeah, again, I think it's that palate cleanser game. It's that, you know, let's spend a night just playing kill teams and chatting rather than, oh, I can't be bothered to carry 2K of army and have this 2-hour long game. It is shorter. And I'm really looking forward to using the blips and the rule set that we came up with for our Wall of Martyrs set that I talked about in right at the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
If you're still with us. and that's kind of something we'll talk about later about building your own rule set based around some of this stuff. But yeah, I look forward to doing blips and having each man move its own way and be really tactful about that. So yeah, I like that about Kill Team. It's got a kind of a charm about it.
So Planet Strike then?
Yeah, that's the next one on the list.
Have you played Planet Strike before?
Yeah, I've played it. I mean, I had the book and then sold it to you.
Yes,
if you remember.
Yeah. So Planet Strike for me is a really good game, really interesting. You can kind of make it really
theatrical. Yeah.
It is interesting.
I don't know. This is a low point for me in how to play 40K, but...
Really?
Go ahead.
Cool. So I really like the game. It basically allows you to have to play that scenario where Space Marines are... either defending a planet or
attacking a planet.
so it is a Space Marine game, basically, where you're playing, you have to play it.
Well, anything can play it.
Yeah, anything can play it. But
Orcs invading is pretty cool.
Yeah. Or I get this one mixed up with Cities of Death.
Planet Strike is the one where you pay for bastions and you attack a base and the attacking army tends to start off the board and everything gains deep strike. And it's so kitted out for the attacker.
That makes the defender, makes it harder for the defender, which is
cool. Yeah, it does. And like, it's not awful. It's well written. Games Workshop's rules, especially missions, tend to be fairly well written. It gives you a different way of playing, which is what this segment's all about. And it gets you to use and probably buy the terrain that goes with it, like bastions and Aegis defense lines and all of that stuff. The updated kind of version of this is Stronghold Assault.
Yep.
Which we will go into a little bit, afterwards.
No, now.
Kind of now, I guess, yeah. But I always found the reason I don't quite like this way of playing, just not for me, I guess, is whenever I defend, doesn't matter how good my list is, how well my tactics go, I just, you know, because it's stuff like the bastions are the kill points.
Yeah.
Everything can deep strike on the attacker's army. There's normally at least three squads with a couple of melters in every army now. Mm. So come down, oh, look, all three of your bastions are gone. I've got all the victory points. Why are we still playing this game?
But then this book is fantastic to pick apart and create your own rule set.
Yes. Oh, yeah, completely for that. And that's where I wouldn't say I hate it. I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
It's just I'd rather play others before it.
Okay. No, I get what you're saying. I think if you can do it in such a way... That doesn't happen where they don't deep strike within 6 inches and get the melter off on you. And bastions are a lot harder to kill now than in sixth edition.
The thing about that is that Stronghold Assault really probably brought life back into this game.
Yeah.
So like you can give void shields to bastions where that never existed before.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't really know much about Stronghold Assault. You have it though, don't you?
Yeah, I have Stronghold Assault. It's basically the update for basically GW being able to get rid of a load more scenery onto you. So they have like the macro cannon, the
Wall of Martyrs stuff kits, that they did. Yeah.
This is especially a book that will allow a user, a player to have that planet strike, but have better weapons and better scenery. And you can really do. So when we played the Overlords, I think it was Steve's birthday event for Haven.
Oh, yeah.
They had all the Wall of Martyrs kits. They had the macro cannons. That's what it's made for. It's made for big games. Like, there is no word of a lie. You cannot get this into a 500-point game. It's pointless.
Yeah.
We're doing a 6, 7K, having all the macro cannons.
Yeah, I can imagine
firing.
It being really cool
it's
at that
epic.
Point.
Epic.
I mean,
I've got a macro cannon, and quite frankly, there's too many spikes in it. I've cut myself on it before.
It's so sharp.
I know.
I've stabbed myself on it. But I have to admit that. I mean, we've played a couple of Planet Strikes, me and you.
Yeah.
And when I've been attacking, I've quite enjoyed it. When I've defended, I've not liked it.
I don't know. When you defend with a macro cannon, it's pretty
fun. Yeah, that's probably made. I think you've got more toys to play with because of the Stronghold Assault now.
Yes.
And you can make it more personalized. You can you can add barbed wire to things. You can do crazy stuff like that now.
And the defender sets up the board.
Yeah, which is really cool. And I think Planet Strike had a similar setup. Stronghold Assault is like Planet Strike Plus.
Yeah, so it kind of revitalized and evened out Planet Strike, because Planet Strike used to be able to, but the defender could only deploy within their buildings within their.
Yeah.
No, that was it. So the buildings had to be deployed after the models. So you could never really deploy anything in buildings because
can't remember
because they never used to it never used to work. But now with the Stronghold Assault, they've put a few missions in, which is again the defending in the middle, defending on one end, and the enemy run towards you. And I've done it a few times with when I've played with Simon and his orcs.
Yeah, when you were doing that narrative stuff.
Yeah, there's some stuff which in the old Planet Strike rules which kind of negates some of the fun. Well, for me, the orcs D3 units, I think, in the attacking army can deep strike. So but you can deep strike right in front of a macro cannon, and you're never going to fire the
APOC blast. Point blank, no way.
At that, so you kind of. Yeah. But then it's got two different buildings attached to it, and they've all got six hull points each.
Yeah,
so
they take
a beating.
Yeah,
I understand what you're saying. It is a. It's a.
I think
an
it's stuff
game.
Like Planet Strike. It had a really cool part of it where you took stratagems.
Yeah.
So you could get, if you were playing big games, you had three each, two each, one each, depending on your points and stuff. And they cost certain points, so it depended on how much you wanted to give up of your list to get that stratagem.
Yeah.
And I like that aspect, but the attacking ones were stuff like bombardment. You know, D6. Strength 9 AP2 large blasts,
yeah,
and they all come down before you deep strike, so you'd lose three tanks, maybe a bastion, to if you rolled really well on the D6 before even the enemy have come down, and then they hurt you even more. And it just felt like you were sharing about Maelstrom and your game with Harry, you were like 7-0 up, and it was like, you're never coming back from this.
Yeah,
I've had a couple of Planet Strike games where that has been the tale. When I'm the defender, there's just no way back.
Yeah.
I can't gain the ground.
You are right.
It's almost too hard. And I love a challenge. And I, like I say, I don't play to, I have to win to have fun. But I just have enjoyed less Planet Strike games than others, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But it's good to play. I mean, you can pick up Planet Strike specifically for like £5 off eBay probably now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I bought mine for about that much. And that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So they're probably rare now, and people are sending them for £500. Or your left arm.
I'll check it.
But let's move on. Yeah, you done?
Yeah. Cool. Cities of Death.
Cities of Death. Now, this is really fun, but really outdated.
Yes.
So they did a White Dwarf update, early 6th, maybe late 5th, in a White Dwarf. And I have got those rules, and they bring it up to date a bit. And to be honest, nowadays, because of the building rules in the rulebook, Cities of Death is a bit obsolete.
Yeah.
So Cities of Death was the first rule set where you could blow up buildings.
Yep.
Where you could, the terrain affected you. You could lay booby traps, mines. Stronghold Assault now allows you to do that, I think. So they've almost taken the Cities of Death book and gone, right, we'll give certain ruins rules. So that goes in the rulebook. We'll take the minefield and the stratagems and put them in Stronghold Assault. This book's now not really needed.
Yeah.
But I've played maybe 3 games only of Cities of Death, and they've probably been the 3 best games I've ever played.
I think Cities of Death, the only thing that I like about that game is the fact that the way you deploy buildings.
Yeah.
Everything else, really couldn't care about. Like, you can play just just play Purge the Alien and then have it in a city.
Yeah.
Is how I'd feel about it.
Yeah, and lots of people do that. And I think with the amount of GW kits that are now out,
yeah,
that you can build city terrain and ruins. I mean, they even do the realm now that's like a city ruin.
Yeah.
I think it's more popular now. And like I say, you've got the rules of buildings in the rulebook.
Yeah.
You know, certain buildings give you rerolls. Certain buildings give you a better cover save. You know, the craters and moonscape give you this. And that stuff didn't exist until Cities of Death.
Yeah.
And they brought it in Cities of Death. The thing I liked is you could choose stratagems again. So you could turn a building into a Medicaid facility.
Yeah.
And any model in that got Feel No Pain. So you could use the board to your advantage, and suddenly the terrain wasn't just there to hide behind. It was really interactive.
Yeah.
And I love that about Cities of Death. And I don't know, it's got quite a close part to my heart. You know, it's not like I've played it a ton of times.
Well, we played it at Forge, didn't we? No, we played it at Warhammer World on the big city board where there's five of us.
Yeah, I didn't go. That wasn't me.
Oh, man.
That was Ryan's birthday.
It was such a good game.
Yeah, no, that wasn't me.
It was so cool. That, obviously, it's Warhammer World, so they have the whole...
Oh, it was amazing, that board. I've seen it. I've been there when it's there.
So they have the Forge World design team do the boards for them, and it's just like they've got like a planetarium with a giant macro cannon sticking out the top, and
sewer works.
Like six or seven story buildings. Amazing game. Amazing table. And then the game is just all out, kill everyone.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was really good to be able to play it there.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've loved Cities of Death, and again, you know, we're kind of leading towards our build your own mission stuff that we're going to end with, but the Cities of Death give you good stratagems. They give you rules for like mines and booby traps and placing bombs and having certain rules for certain buildings, and you can take that and just drop that in, like Sam said, into your normal games.
Yep.
And suddenly that Purge the Alien, that Big Guns Never Tire, has a twist in it, and you know, and just picking up a, you know, your rule book and the Cities of Death book, and suddenly, you know, you choose someone to be a defender of the city and they get to place booby traps. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Just do it. And that's a rule straight out of a different book. You know, so yeah, Cities of Death, I don't know, I love it because I love city terrain. I love the stratagem side of things. I like the deployment, like you shared, tallest building in the middle, and then you take it in turns to place outwards.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, is really cool. Just looks amazing. Try it. I could just keep going.
Stop then.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, so army-specific missions and supplements, Altar of War missions, or even the old Battle Missions book. So Battle Missions is probably my favourite book. I've got that one.
Yeah, and it's old, but it's holding up. Those missions are still playable now.
You kind of have to pinch the salt with them and then sort of adapt them.
Yeah, you might have to adapt them a tiny bit.
But it's stuff like, you have, correct me if I'm wrong, each race has three missions. One,
yep.
One in the favour of the race, one against the race completely, and one sort of evened out.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was.
So what I remember we used to do is used to roll for who would get whose race it would be.
Yep.
And then you'd roll another dice, and it was one and two, three and four, five and six.
Yeah, D3.
So of what mission it would be, and then it was very much like a.
It had a deployment. It had mission special rules. Had this is how many objectives. This is where they're set up. They're much more structured, I guess.
The only issue I found was you could never really plan what army you were going to bring, because it meant that you'd have to take you could only take heavy support.
The Force Org was altered, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you basically have to take your entire 9K army with you in order to do something.
But then, I don't know, the pickup game for if you were playing a Battle Missions book, you know, you don't need to do that. Let's play that this Saturday. Let's roll up now.
So we can do the army.
And then, then we can go home and build our lists and know what we're doing.
It's such a cool way of playing. It's definitely worth it. It's one of those books which will probably be really cheap on eBay or in bookstores, but is well worth just to have because it's such an interesting way of playing.
Yeah, and those missions still work. They still work now, and you just have to, you know, slightly tweak them, but hardly, to be honest.
So that's the Battle Missions book. What about the Altar of War?
Altar of War is basically the new Battle Missions book.
Okay.
It's a little bit different in the sense that I think it's more missions.
Okay.
So I've got, they did Altar of War for each race, and you bought that. And you bought it digitally?
Each race?
Yeah, so I've got the NIDS one on my iPad.
Do they do it for Space? As for Blood Angels?
Yeah. Every race has one.
Really?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh. Well,
but yeah, so, and it's six missions rather than three.
Yep.
And they tend, well, the NID one is a NID invasion.
Okay.
So mission one is the start, and mission six is like it's got really bad.
Okay.
And you just play. It's almost like you play through them in order.
It's like a campaign kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess you can make it a campaign.
Yeah, one-on-one campaign.
Yeah, you can make it a one-on-one campaign and play through those missions, which is really cool. I don't know if they're all like that because I haven't looked that much into them.
Okay.
But they compiled them all into one big book. Okay. So you can either buy the book that's got all the races in up until now, because I don't think they've done them all yet.
Okay.
Or you can either wait for your one to come out, or like I did, I just bought the NID ones for, you know, a tenner, something like that, and had the six missions that I'm going to play through.
It worth a tenner?
I can't remember if it was a tenner or not.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you price value. They look really fun, and I've probably played it maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really comment on, you know, whether I'd keep playing that mission or, oh, I've done that once, I don't want to do it again. You know, that's how I feel about Planet Strike. I did it a couple of times, I'm not that bothered. And I'm sure playing Stronghold I might come back into it, but
yeah,
that's roughly how I feel. I'm not sure if these are like that or you could play them over and over again.
Yeah.
But they're worth checking out, especially if you want something specific. What I've really liked is in some of the supplements they've brought out, there have been a few missions in the back.
Cool.
So I think it started with, what's the Elder one? The Yandan supplement they brought out?
Yeah.
Is it Yandan?
Yeah, the Yandan.
Yeah, yeah. They have, I think, five or six missions in the back that are, three of them are like historic missions that actually happened and you recreating those bits of background.
Yeah.
And the other three are just almost like the old battle mission books.
Yeah.
And they did that for the Yandan one. They did that for, what's the other supplement? Imperial Fists.
Yep.
Sentinels of Terror. The Iron Hands, Clan Rukan book. They did it in those. So, yeah, they're quite cool. They're the supplement ones. I've played a couple of the ones with Ben.
Yep.
And I guess the cool thing, but trouble, is the missions tend to have, it needs to be Imperial Fists versus Orcs.
Right.
Because you're playing a certain battle on a certain world.
So they specify. You could easily tailor it, but
yeah,
they specify.
Could, but they do specify, and they specify so well that you probably would struggle.
Yeah,
like you could take the deployment and just rewrite everything else, you know, something like that. But I mean, having played, I think we played the Imperial Fist and the Orc one. It was Imperial Fist and Tyranids.
Okay,
and the Imperial Fists were holding a corner of the board, and the Tyranids had three quarters of the board, and they had to deploy 18 inches apart.
Yeah.
And the Imperial Fist won if they had a model alive. And they lost if they were tabled. But they had 500 points less.
Okay.
There was, you know, they balanced it, and it was literally down to the wire. It was really fun to play.
I think going from like the Planet Strike battle missions to these ones, GW have progressed so much further in the way that they're developing their missions. They're becoming more, not more fairer, but kind of a more, you can tell they've played them before they print them.
Yes. I mean, I really liked the advent calendar where they had the two kind of streams. They had the background, the Black Library side, and then the digital edition side.
Yeah.
And some days they did a short story and then a mission to play that short story.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so amazing. Like, that excites me. You know, I'd love to play Battle of the Fang. It's one of the things that really excited me about the Master of the Forge. Podcast, because they did missions to play the certain parts of the book.
Right.
And it was like, oh, that sounds quite cool. And, you know, maybe I'll give it another listen, write down the rules and give it a go.
PDF from their website.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I could just do that.
Sorry, shameless plug. But, yeah, you can download it from PDF from the website. And then all that.
So they sounded quite cool. And, yeah, reliving, you know, it's almost like reenactment. You know, and I wouldn't want to go crazy far into that, but doing that every now and again could be really good. So I thought that was a really cool aspect that GW, I don't think, have really done before.
No.
So, yeah, and like we say, there's so many different ways to play this game now.
Uh-huh.
And I really like what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I hope they just keep widening the amount of games we can play.
Yep.
But let's move on before we start rambling. Zone Mortalis games.
Best.
Have you played any?
Best game ever. However, this is going to sound really snobbery. I wouldn't play it unless I had a Zone Mortalis board. I know people make their own.
Yeah, but it depends on the quality, I think. I've seen people make their own and I've been like, no. And I've seen ones where they've just been
phenomenal.
Brilliant.
So Johnny's making his own at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's looking pretty good. Like
Plasticardi.
It's like 25% done or something.
Yeah. Then you see the ones like, but if you've been to, sorry to keep bringing up Warhammer World, but if you've been to Warhammer World, they have an 8x6, is it?
I can't remember what it is. It's big.
It is huge. Board and there's no mortality and you can lift them and shift them and put them around.
Yeah,
and
move it all around, do what you want.
And we played a couple of kill teams on it, and it is such a good game. And the rule set is so cool as well.
Yeah, you can download the rule set for free from Forge World.
Yeah,
even now, and I've done that, and then I've applied some of those rules to fighting on normal boards.
I think you can see where we're going to go with this. At the
end. Yeah, you really can. Yes.
But like one of them is like the blast templates.
Yeah.
So as soon as the blast template will move down the corridor and it can be, if it goes over a wall, that's fine.
Until
the center blast hits the wall, in which case that's when it detonates. But it detonates, it doesn't disappear. So it means that if anyone's underneath that corner, you're still going to hurt them, but you can't hurt the people on the other side.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. You can have people with remote controls to close the doors. You can.
Yeah, blow open doors. Flamers gain shred.
Yep.
Because they're in confined spaces, exactly. So they're more likely to burn you.
It's basically, I remember playing a lot of the Space Hulk stuff, and it's basically a more 3D, 40K version of Space Hulk.
Yeah, and I love that fact. And I've seen it played a lot in online battle reports. It was, for a long time, a bit of a flavour of the month. Like everyone was doing it, and now it seems to have evened out a bit.
I definitely do want to run a board, though.
I'd love one. They're just so expensive.
They are so expensive. It'd be one of those things where I think Stuart, our friend Stuart, who's moved away now, is buying his, but buying it tile by tile, like doing like the set of four, buying that, and then building and painting them.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool way of doing it. Okay, you will pay more for like shipping and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you can't afford to go and buy the giant one, £1,000 a board,
something like that, and it's only like a 4x4.
So if you can't afford to do that, it's not £1,000 for 4x4, but it's a lot of money for a 4x4. If you can't afford to do that, then you buy a tile at a time, and okay, it's longer, it's more in the long run, but you get a board.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of it, and if I had a permanent setup gaming area, like if I lived in a bigger house or had a gaming room. Yep. Then I'd probably have bought one already because
you
can't
buy it
help
and put
it.
A board on top of it.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm so buying one of my
house. Yeah, exactly. Because
I'm going to have lots of money after buying a house, aren't I?
Yeah. It's one of those dreams that, may happen, may not.
Many nerds never do.
Yeah. but I've really enjoyed any games we've played. We've kind of, done the simple version of Zone Mortalis. Like, you can go really deep and use all of the rules. And play the exact mission types. I haven't done that. I've just gone, let's play Zone Mortalis and kind of try and kill each other, but we've added the blast rules and the flamer rules.
That's just because I forget them. So there's so many of them that you have to be proper on it to play Zone Mortalis properly.
Yeah, well, it's like a mini rulebook for its own game. I mean, I love the rules where, you can blow open the side of it with the strength of the weapon and, people can get sucked out into the void and all of this kind of stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, really cool. Like,
exactly. And I've never known that.
Yeah,
but,
it's really cool, but it's just another... unless you're playing on a Zone Mortalis board, like in a specific one, then, I tend to just go for the simple ones.
They take it or leave it, the rules.
Yeah, I guess so. And you can make it your own. And that's the whole point of what we're talking about. But it's another way of gaming. And if you've not tried it, download the rules. Make up a hallway worth of books, just to try it out. Why not?
Yeah.
That's probably a really easy way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah. I'll tell you what, there's other things that we can talk about. But I want to move on to the campaigns. So campaign books like the GW Crusade of Fire or the Imperial Armor books or even the Horus Heresy books that Forge World do.
So you've got the NID one, the Amphilion Project, which has a campaign in it.
Yeah.
What's the campaign like?
I haven't done that much reading on it.
Right.
Because at the moment, I've been building my NIDs up. I've only just about got... I don't even think I've got enough to play
it
all the way through. It's Tyranids versus Red Scorpion, Space Marines, and Inquisitor. Well, they're not really, but it just so happens that the two books that have recently been done include them.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's basically Space Marines arrive, there's a threat, what is the threat, a they go to it's basically take Jurassic Park. Yeah. All the electric fences have gone down, the NIDs are running amok, and the first thing they hear about it is when a Morlock comes flying through the floor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whoa! And that's kind of first contact, and then there's one mission where all the NIDs gain the jump rule because they've all evolved wings and ways of getting over the fences.
Okay.
So you play every NID creature has the jump inventory rule and jump monster creature rule. So it can't fly, but it still moves 12, so it's quicker.
Yeah.
And there's a downside to it as well, but there's different rules for the fences. So you can play like the electric fences, but if you keep throwing gaunts at it, you can eventually like fry out its circuits and it can go down.
Okay.
And things like that. So you can, you know, the defender, I think it is, like the Space Marine player, sets up the fences how they want, and the NID player can either walk around them or just go straight through them, and monstrous creatures can kind of break it, but they might cause a couple of wounds on the way through and all this kind of stuff. It's really cool. And it would be nice to do one day, but a lot of it actually uses Zone Mortalis rules.
Okay.
So, because a lot of it takes place in the bases on the planet.
Yeah.
It's like the NIDs have broken through and they're in the bases where they control all the pens, I guess, or whatever you call them, the areas, and they're trying to kill everyone, and there's fighting retreats in hallways by Space Marines, shoulder to shoulder, bolter firing as Gene Stealers run at them. It's really, really cool. That's quite a cool campaign. The Independent Character podcast, they do a lot on their Horus Heresy books.
Yeah.
And they say the latest one, I think book 4, Conquest.
Yep. Yeah.
Has got an amazing campaign rule set that any player would want.
Yeah.
I think the thing about campaigns is if you've got someone who you play with a lot, someone who you want to kind of develop a story either for your army and your own collection, like you've got a hero and you want to forge a story about him and what he likes, whether he's a specialist against orcs or tyrannids or whatever, you can forge that in a narrative, in a campaign.
I think, campaigns, I think, are made for a group of friends to enable them to game more with a purpose.
Yeah.
Or for a club. I understand there's not... I don't really see the point in having a campaign for a specific character, because you're kind of... Unless that's the point of the campaign to play with other people. You can't just go, I'm only going to be playing my campaign games because I want my captain to start having...
I think you'd have to... So me and you, our orcs and Grey Knights.
Yeah.
Why are we fighting? Well, rather than just having games and building up points, if we want to put a bit of story behind it, then actually we, almost write a campaign or borrow a campaign system from these kind of books.
Yeah.
So that my war boss can get a reputation.
Yeah, I think there's a very quite a thin line between creating a backstory and doing a campaign.
Yes.
We haven't done a campaign. We've done, because otherwise I'd be like, well, let's have specific missions then.
Yeah.
And then I think a campaign is awesome. Like, we did one over the summer with our gaming group.
And we learned a lot from that. A lot of mistakes were made, and we learned about how to do that better. And
yeah, absolutely. And that kind of targeted our gaming over the summer, which was cool. But that took a lot of work, and there's a lot of stuff that we probably need to look to change for that, because it's the amount of time we can game.
Yeah, I think campaigns are like you say, they're for clubs, they're for gaming groups who want a bit more purpose to their gaming.
Yeah.
But I think your veteran gamers who play a lot and maybe are getting a bit sick of even all the options we've already gone through, writing their own campaign might be that bit of hobby oomph they need to keep collecting, to keep playing. So I think it's kind of the top end of designing your own stuff.
Yeah.
Let's take it down a notch and talk about designing our own missions.
Okay.
I mean, you've done that before, haven't you?
Yeah. I've pretty much just... The way I did it was, this would be really cool if... So it would be really cool if I could do this way and then sort of fit the mission around it. So it'd be like... I was listening to quite a lot of... I was reading a lot of the books about... A lot of books about Blood Angels being attacked.
Yeah.
And I thought, it'd be really cool to do a wide-scale... mass attack on Blood Angels. Right, how can I make a mission fit that?
Yeah.
Okay, so Blood Angels are now sitting on a Forge world, and the Orcs attack. okay, cool. So how what special things can I use? Well, there's not really a lot of men on the Forge World. It's because they're just they're producing tanks. So right, so a lot of tanks will be used and armaments because they're well defended. And then you sort of build it up and layer and layer and layer. Yeah. I think it's I think that the campaign, so the missions you build, should reflect your who you're going to be playing against. No point creating a campaign for yourself and against Chaos if everyone in your gamer groups plays Nids.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
Don't make it too complicated is one of my suggestions.
Yes, I mean,
and make it balanced.
Yeah, I mean, writing it with your opponent can sometimes be the best option.
Yeah.
Not always, but if you're trying to do something together, then why not?
Yeah.
I think the breadth of books and data that we have access to now, like we've shared all of those different ways of playing the game with just picking up a book and playing it, like taking it off the shelf, and you can play Cities of Death, Planet Strike, Stronghold Assault, Maelstrom, you know, all of that stuff. You can play so many different things just by the book. If you're starting out and want to write your own missions, take a book mission and tweak it, because there's professionals, and people will argue how good they are potentially, but I don't care really. They're professionals at designing games.
Yeah.
So use their stuff and then just create something slightly different. And the more used to it you get, the more you can adapt it, and the more you can step away from the books and suddenly create something completely on your own. But I think that's a step that comes in time.
Yeah, effectively, this is a legitimized way of you creating, you gaming how you want to game, and then building that story around that. And having, so if, for instance, me and Matt, if we wanted to do Nids versus Blood Angels, and not just be a let's beat the hell out of each other, we could go, okay, well, let's do a Blood Angels are going to eradicate a Nid world because they are.
Yeah.
And then you build missions around that.
Yeah.
And then you take the ones, so you take the, right, we're gonna fight in a city. Let's look at the Cities of Death stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to do a Planet 4. Let's look at the Planet Strike stuff. And you take those different sections and add them in the bits you like.
Yeah.
Admittedly, like you said, there are bits in those missions that you don't like. The way they work. So like you like the stratagems, but you don't like the fact that I get 7 bombardments when I hit the
deck.
So you get rid of the stuff you don't like, keep the stuff you do like, and then try and make it balanced. Because that's ultimately the bit that I find really difficult, is to make the game balanced. Because I'm always like, well, I'd like to be able to get 10 apocalypse templates as soon as they run into my camp.
Yeah.
And actually, if I was playing that, I'd be like, well, why?
Why, yeah. And I think that's where, if that's the kind of, you know, story you're trying to create, then they're the kind of moments that you plan with your opponent.
Yeah.
Because if I knew that going into it, I'll happily run my Nids at it if the rule is they come back on next turn automatically.
Exactly.
You know, all those kind of things. And when you write that together. Me and Imperial Fist Ben are doing a campaign of kind of how my High Fleet's just been discovered. And they've basically taken over a world, and we used the Order of War missions from the Tyranid book as a base for the mission, and then chatted about how we wanted to tweak it to fit the story we were telling.
Yeah.
And we're writing a campaign together that's very loose, and it's kind of, okay, that happened, so the next mission needs to be a bit like this.
Okay. So rather than it being a campaign then, is that not a continuation of a fluff-driven mission?
Yes.
Because obviously I see a campaign being a, there's a start and the end. It's the Nids are doing this. Let's plan the missions before we go in there.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your idea of a campaign. I think written campaigns definitely have a beginning and the end.
Yeah.
And they don't always have the same ending. You normally leave options for one force wins, one force doesn't. But I think you can write a campaign as you go. I mean, the Mini Wargaming do this really well. Their website, that they have online areas that you can look up their battle reports and their painting guides and all that stuff. And they do kind of mission by mission. Okay, that character died, so that means this.
Okay.
I think I remember sharing in an old episode, actually, like me and Ben came up with a character death table based off a mission that we'd seen on Mini Wargaming.
Yeah.
So it was like, if your character died, they weren't dead, but they rolled on a character table, and if they rolled a 6 and they added the plus modifiers, they could be dead and not be able to play in the campaign again, or they might be minorly injured, so they lose a couple of stats.
Yeah.
You know, so it carries forward, and so how you play that game matters for the next one, and then you kind of keep going until the story kind of ends. you know, it might take you four missions because one army is just winning and winning and winning. So by the fourth mission, you're like, well, they've won.
Yeah.
But it might take 12 because it's so backwards and forwards and you're really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I guess it is making it your own.
Yeah, that's whether it's a campaign or just a your
standalone.
Own your own mission, it's the you playing it the way you want to with your opponent. So
yeah,
it's definitely worth these books, which aren't going so expensive anymore, are definitely worth picking up because it means that you can use them or extracts of them to tailor how you want your games to go.
Yeah, I think this segment is really about, well, for anyone really, it's for the guys who have been playing the same people again and again and again and want to spice up their gaming by either creating their own stuff or just playing a game type that they've not played before. Could be for a club or a group that have, again, want to do a campaign so they've got more purpose or want to, you know, say, right, the next time we meet up, we're all going to play a Planet Striker or a, you know, Dark Elder mission from the Battle Missions book. I guess what we're ultimately trying to say is that however confident you are, there's so many different ways of playing the game just from a book. And if you want to go a step further, you can alter those missions from all of these vast sources and create something. Or you could go completely full ham and create a campaign with your friend, with your gaming group that's completely off topic, but uses, again, these as foundations. I think that's what really works.
Yeah.
And that's that. There's so many different ways of playing the game. Enjoy them. We do. And spice up your gaming life. You know, fuel your hobby through your gaming. That's how I tend to get really excited about this hobby, is through having awesome games, and then it makes me want to paint those units and get them ready for the next one. We're going to end here and come back with our final thoughts. See you soon. So here we are with our final thoughts. I've really enjoyed this episode recording. I think we started off quite shakily.
Well, I think all our episodes start off quite shakily.
Yeah.
Just getting into
it. It's hard to get into a rhythm. This is why this episode is called Bloopers Galore, because there's quite a few that you'll probably enjoy after this.
Yeah. It's so cold.
Yeah, it is quite cold. I really enjoyed talking about Bjorn, talking about cold, the cold ice on Fenris. Bjorn's one of my favourite characters of the background entirely. So that was just a real pleasure. So thanks, Sam, for letting me do it.
Yeah, and the missions are quite... I like talking about the missions, realising actually how much I use those to use sections of each mission book or each mission pack to kind of tailor my gaming, which is quite cool. Sometimes the standard ones, like the rulebook missions, are quite boring. And then reminding myself that there actually are other ways, other things we can do is quite cool.
Yeah, I like spicing up my games. And just talking about it made me really excited. It made me want to play another mission with Ben. It made me want to create a new story. It got me really excited about playing this Saturday at the club. So yeah, hopefully it did that for you too. Next episode, in a month's time, episode number 7. Wow, 7 months. We're going to be talking about the online community of 40K.
Yep.
In our hobby section, Life in the Hobby, because that's actually a big part of the hobby now. And we're also going to even speak about a Primarch.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We just want to say a big thank you for the guys who have been talking to us over Facebook, specifically Jack and Matt this month, just in the last few weeks. But all of you guys, Paul's been sharing awesome stuff. There's quite a few of you guys on the page now. Keep sharing, keep talking, get more people to like and listen. We want to keep this podcast going, keep it growing. That nearly rhymed and sounded lame.
That's fine. Okay, I'll take over then. Awesome. So I'll see you guys next week. Next month.
You? We?
Well, if I keep you. I might sack you.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to the next episode. Hope you enjoy this one. And we'll see you soon.
Bye. I've been recording the entire time.
I know. Just waiting okay. For a lull.
Right, lull of pause.
Yeah.
Can't believe you bought a Barb Theodore.
There's a story behind that.
Is it your wife was upset that you were upset your wife having a baby, so you decided to have your own?
No, conversations happened too early.
Go on. Sorry. I've got really rusty trousers.
Shush. Are you ready here?
Can't hear it.
I can.
Right, okay. Go. And go. Go.
I need, like...
Right, a couple of seconds.
A few seconds, yeah. Hello.
Yeah, because I don't say anything, because it's you.
I find it so hard to start, and then once we're in the flow, I'm fine. Oh, should introduce myself, really. I'm Matt.
And I'm Sam. I was waiting for you to say that, so I can go, and I'm Sam. That's the only thing I say in the intro.
And we're the Adeptus Terra podcast. If you're listening to us for the first time, thanks.
Welcome on board.
If you're listening to us for potentially the sixth time now, you're a glutton for punishment. But I'm glad you're still here. Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the Adeptus Terra podcast. Insert title here. I'm Matt.
And I am Sam.
And this is our 6 month episode.
Sixth episode.
Sixth episode in 6 months, yeah.
That's a long time. It's, 6 months, yeah, half a year.
Shot by really quickly.
You're now 38 and I'm the young age of 21.
Yeah, you can believe that if you want.
Well, you're what, 29?
No, I'm 28.
27?
I'll go with that. Our friends and family have been behind us. That sounds really dramatic, but... My wife has been.
Damn, my girlfriend doesn't want me to record anymore, so my girlfriend's
well,
behind me.
Tough.
She can't. She doesn't listen anyway. So
you can say what you like here.
Yeah, I can.
I'm a bit biased because we're talking about Bjorn today.
Bjorn, it's, the rock fist.
Yeah, something like that.
The fist of glory.
Oh. So welcome back. This is our second segment, Pain and Joy of 40K. This is where we just chat about the things we're not so. Liking, that doesn't make any sense. Why am I so bad tonight?
Have you noticed how you start all your segments with, yeah, welcome back, or...
Do I?
You always start with saying, yeah. I have to edit it out, man. It's so annoying. Yeah!
I'm glad you do that.
Yeah!
Stop it.
Yeah! Silence.
Why are you taking it? Because you're pissing me off.
Yes, I am. Sorry, go on. I'll stop.
So welcome back. This is our second segment of the Pain and Joy of 40K, where we share the things that we're not liking as much and the things that we're really enjoying. It might be to do with the coming month. That's nope. What the hell? So welcome back. No, shut up. Stop it. I don't want to be here all night.
Cheese grater. Sorry, I thought we were going to do the word thing.
All right, no. So welcome back. This is our second segment, Pain and Joy of 40K. We're just going to share what we're loving and what we're hating at the moment. What?
That was so awful.
I know. I don't know what to say. I've like blown all of my normal entries.
Maybe she's like a surprise entry, but like, hello.
Nah, we'll do it.
Okay.
And we'll just pause there because... I need a breath.
Cut here, Sam. Cut here. So cold. So, I'm so freezing. I'm freezing cold. I don't know why. I don't get cold.
Yeah, I'm not cold at all. I've been wearing a woolly hat, though.
Can't turn the aircon on.
Anyway.
Section 6.
Section 6.
4.
Segment. And yes, the fourth, the last. We just call it the last.
The last segment.
Cool. Here we go.